Well, what a 101 WRIF. Let me see here. Why aren't we getting our... Oh, I see what happened here. How you doing? Peter Werby here with you, and we are not getting our open as we should. Let's see if we can do it officially. I think we can now. There we go.
You're listening to the award-winning Night Call, the Riff's phone-in talk show on 101 WRIF Detroit. Now, here's the host of Night Call, Peter Werby.
All right, that's a little more official. Thank you very much, Mr. Announcer. Oh, these machines. We used to just have guys in boxes doing announces. A little announce box, right? And he'd say, and now, ladies and gentlemen, the host of our show. But now we have a big, massive, intricate, complex digital system. Nobody understands it. I don't. Oh, well. Maybe it's for another generation. How you doing? Welcome to the broadcast. We're all so high here on the Motor City Music Conference that occurred over the weekend. Wow. And all the music that Doug Podell and Jay Hudson put together for this special three-hour Motor City Riff Show that just occurred from 8 o'clock to 11 o'clock. And I feel like I've been shouting at a concert. Listen to my voice. Let me see. There we go. Sounds a little better, right? Thank you for joining me in our WRIF listening audience in kind of the tri-state and southern Ontario area. Also, everybody listening on WRIF.com. People on radiopower.org are listening on the net as well. Around the world, it's absolutely incredible. As Doug Podell said just before he ended his show a few minutes ago, email from Sweden, and actually this is about a technical matter and something that's been kind of plaguing us and I guess our Drew and Mike morning show as well, trying to get the levels of you callers that call into 313-298-WRIF and get on the air here. I'm like booming out, and you guys are like way back here, right? So we just couldn't figure out what was going on. And in fact, I hope I'm saying his name right. Joachim, J-O-A-K-I-M, Joachim, I don't know. Anyways, he's listening on the net in Sweden, and he actually was right on the problem. I mean, that our WRIF engineers fixed it, but he actually understood it as well. So thank you very much. Last week, I guess maybe this is the final thought on this. Remember, we were playing Imagine, the John Lennon tune, except we were playing it by Perfect Circle, Maynard's group after Tool. And it kind of broke down. We were saying, what'd you think about each version? And it was kind of like people under 30 liked Perfect Circle, people over 30 and over 40 liked John Lennon's version. Well, I mean, it didn't come as any real surprise. But it was what was interesting, what people read into each version of it. But I thought this was interesting. Morgan, who's 17 and listening in Ontario, said, I prefer the Perfect Circle version of Imagine. Before they covered this song, I'd forgotten it existed. Maynard covered this song at an important time, right when people forgot about what John Lennon was trying to say years back. I think this song opened the eyes of a lot of people in the younger generation. So there's no conflict. Right? It wasn't like, I don't know, I'm trying to think like, you know, redoing some Glenn Miller tune or something like that. This is the generation of rockers go on. And, it's a pleasure to be part of it. And I appreciate all of you being part of WRIF and part of the Night Call show as well. Here's someone, I guess, in the older generation. He's a 54-year-old American living in Japan. He writes into calltalkyes@yahoo.com. He's living in Kashima City, Japan. His name's Warden. He's listening. And actually, maybe I'll read his letter a little later, because it's kind of long. It's about more, one of these serious issues. It's something about music. Did I say this on the air? Last week, I think about this program a lot, so sometimes I don't remember whether I've said things or I've just thought it during the week. But sometimes I think, rather than yakking for 2 hours, and believe it, I mean, I've done 6 talk shows a week, and some of them 3 hours long, and I'm just yagging, no problem with that. But music is so expressive. So expressive. Like I was thinking last week when we played the Perfect Circle tune, we played the John Lennon tune, and we played David Rovics, and who else? I thought we had some other music on as well. That said everything that I had to say, and maybe there's something special about when the ideas come out in music, because music is special to a lot of us. In fact, maybe even most of us. It hits a particular chord in human beings. That's why all people have music of some sort. you know, based on rhythm, particularly. That's why, oh no. Remember last time I started talking about other kinds of music, I got in a lot of trouble. But kind of that music that poses as rock and roll, they call it rock, but it's just this kind of soft rock or something. That's not rock and roll. All right. Peter Werby's my name. My website is peterwerby.com, P-E-T-E-R-W-E-R-B-E.com. A lot of good stuff on there, a lot of stuff we're going to talk about tonight. Call us. That's the best way. 313-298-WRIF. And if you're far away or bashful, you can go to calltalkyes@yahoo.com and send me an email. If it's short and to the point, I'll try to read it on the air. If it's long, I can't sort through it quickly, so I'll probably just read it tomorrow. And if you'd like to be in the chat room, that's where you can discuss what's going on as we talk. Tom Hartman, one of my old colleagues on talk radio, has lets us hitchhike at this time. Pardon me. So if you go to tomhartman.com, go through a few hoops, not bad. I did it myself one time. You can get right on the air. Okay, so let me look at our phones. No one's calling in yet, which means, as usual, you're waiting for me to set the tone, the subject matter, to introduce topics, to ask you questions. Perfectly all right with me. That's the way talk shows usually progress, and that's usually what happens here. However, when you say, I get email from people, how come you never talk about fill in the blanks? Well, it's because we get started on something else. And if you want to talk about fill in the blanks, call 313-298-WRIF or send me an email at calltalkyes@yahoo.com. And I can tell I'm going to be going into this Godfather mode pretty quickly. Pardon me. Now, winter's back, right? I don't know. I should tell people that aren't in the Detroit area. We got this terrible weather prediction that it was going to be 4 to 7 inches of snow last night. Didn't happen. But still, it's like 30 degrees and there's snow on the ground. So back with it came the cold. Remember last week I was reading part of this article from Rolling Stone magazine called The Crusaders. Christian evangelicals are plotting to remake America in their own image. Now, the concept, probably learned it in high school, what do they call it? Not physics. What's the other stuff? Civics. I knew it rhymed, at least. High school civics about pluralism, that there's divergent opinions in this country, and people in divergent politics and philosophies and all of that. And in a democratic country, we don't want one philosophy to so dominate another one and the people that hold it that it virtually becomes a dictatorship. I mean, that's usually the only way it happens, is some group or some man gets control of the levers of power of government and then forces his or their opinion on everyone else. And usually they're a minority. They're usually a minority. I mean, think about Nazi Germany. The last free election in Germany, and I'm forgetting all my German history, was either in 1932 or 1933. I think it was 32. Hitler got something like a third of the votes. A third of the votes. 33%. Well, through skillful political machinations and a lot of chicanery, maybe it's the same thing, he gained control of the power of the state. And through that, then could force his view of the world, his politics, his insanity, his racism, his warmongering and aggression on the rest of the nation and hence on the rest of the world. And he got a third of the vote. A third of the vote. And my opinion, you tell me your opinion at 313-298-WRIF, a third of any democratic country is always pure fascist. Pure fascist, pure Nazi. And I don't mean they're going to go out and say Sieg Heil and they want to put Jews in concentration camps or anything like that. But they essentially are undemocratic, support authoritarian rule. And if they're the type, in this country, if they said, hey, we've got to stop the next election, we've got to end judicial oversight and all of that because of the threat to the country from, again, fill in the blanks. This is the third of the country, the authoritarian personalities, the fascist personalities, who would say, yeah, that's okay. We need to do it because, and that was what happened in Germany and Spain, Japan, and any other jillions of countries. And what happens, of course, and they rule by the police, in a police state, by fear, and it's not just by fear, because if you step out of line, they'll do something to you. So the rest of the people are either eliminated or cowered CO, you know, they're cowed, I guess is the thing. I mean, someone's going to say, hey, if you say I object, they're going to put you in jail or torture you or execute you or your family. Well, you tend to kind of quiet down. So a third of our country is like that as well, in my estimation. And I don't know. I'll keep you in the dark about where I think that sector of the population resides in terms of political parties and who they vote for and who they support, right? Okay, so let's go on to the Crusaders here. This is the article in the Rolling Stone magazine. They're talking about this huge church in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, where this last February, 900 of America's staunchest Christian fundamentalists gathered in Fort Lauderdale. And here is the name of the conference: Reclaiming America for Christ. Reclaiming. In other words, once it somehow was Christ's dominion, the U.S. was, and it slipped away. I mean, they don't really, I mean, I'm sure they do, but it doesn't say here how they think that all happened. Remember, and I was saying about, they rouse themselves with the bloodiest of hymns. Soldiers of the cross, arise, seize your armor, gird it on, the battle will be won. Soon your enemies all slain, crowns of glory you shall gain. I mean, this is pure fascism. Slay your enemies. These aren't people with which we have genuine disagreements, and we may want to live differently, or we're going to live, even isn't this the best way? We're going to live our lives the way we want, and you folks over there who don't agree with us at all, live your lives the way you want. Doesn't that make a whole lot of sense? Instead of taking those people that disagree with you and through whatever means, I mean, fascism both is what they call extra legal, that is outside of the legal system, and also when they gain the power of the state within the legal system. So they set up laws that reflect their narrow views, even if they're only a third of the population. Before that, they're involved in terrorism and all sorts of intimidation, political intimidation, cultural intimidation, employment intimidation, that kind of deal. So they have the personal attributes, personality characteristics of a bully, and bullies translate into fascist and authoritarian personalities when they enter the political arena, and when they coalesce, it's fascism. Oh, it can't happen here. Well, we're on the road, folks. Anyways, the Bob Moser article in Rolling Stone magazine called The Crusaders, Meet the Dominionists, biblical literalists who believe God has called them to take over the U.S. government. Well, isn't that nice? I mean, I'm not one of them. I mean, God has not spoken to me recently. So, you know, the arrogance of these people. God speaks through them and tells them to reclaim the U.S. for Jesus or for Christ. As the far right wing of the evangelical movement, Dominionists are pressing an agenda, where they want to rewrite the school books to reflect the Christian version of American history, pack the nation's courts with judges who follow Old Testament law, post the Ten Commandments in every courthouse, and make it a felony for gay men to have sex and women to have abortions. Their ultimate goal is to plant the seeds of a faith-based government that will endure far longer than Bush's presidency, all the way until Jesus comes back. Now, let's see. The godfather of the Dominionist is D. James Kennedy, the most influential evangelical you've never heard of, says the article in Rolling Stone. A former Arthur Murray dance instructor, he's launched his Florida ministry in 1959 when most... Kennedy built Coral Ridge Ministries into a $37 million a year empire with a TV and radio audience of 3 million by preaching it was time to save America, not soul by soul, but election by election. And he says, our job is to reclaim America for Christ as the vice regents of God. Isn't there, I mean, come on, some of you people know the Bible. I don't know it at all, but some of you know it. I mean, when you start self-identifying as the vice regent of God, I mean, there's got to be something. Come on, somebody go get the Old and New Testament about the sin of arrogance or of, you know, what's the fancy Greek word for it? Hubris, H-U-B-R-I-S. I mean, immediately, to me, this announces that these people are so far off the wall. I'm God's vice regent. Anyways, here's what they want to do. We, they write, are to exercise godly dominion and influence over our neighborhoods, our schools, our government, our literature and arts, our sports arenas, our entertainment media, our news media, our scientific endeavors, in short, over every aspect and institution of human society. So you've heard it here. This is what these people want to do. This is a religio-fascistic credo. Religious fascists who want to dominate all of our lives. They want to tell us what we can do with our body, who we can have sex with, what we can see on television, what kind of decorations are going to be in sports arenas, I guess, what's going to be said on our news media. I mean, that's exactly what Hitler did. The first thing that Hitler did, very first single act when the Nazis took over the government, was to close the Munich Post, a newspaper called the Munich Post. Why did they close that? Because it told the truth about the Nazis. They were lying scum. They were corrupt. They were involved in financial and sexual scandals. And Hitler hated the media because it exposed them for the liar and opportunist and the, I don't know, got to search for a lot of words to describe Jesus. Wow. Hitler, rather. Sorry. That was total Freudian sleep. Sorry. Sorry. So now we're facing with Injustice Sunday, or I guess they're calling it Justice Sunday. Radical Right's anti-filibuster show, an assault on the truth. Well, this is something that's going on out of Kentucky, where these folks are they're trying to whip up the faithful in an attack on the judiciary. Now, the judiciary, including the Supreme Court, is stacked with conservatives. 10 out of the 13 districts have a majority of Republicans. There's a Republican majority on the Supreme Court. But this doesn't make them happy. What they want is, you know, they talk about the Constitution. The Constitution, they like as long as it works for them. When it doesn't, they want to change the Constitution, or they want to change the way the society is run so they get their way. And this is going on when religion, rather than being some discreet private act where people come together, I don't mean it has to be individualistic, but come together in specific houses of worship, no matter what the religion is, and speak to their God in terms of what they are there for, whatever the nature of their spirituality or sense of salvation or philosophical affirmation or whatever. When it starts wanting to intervene in the body politic, in the life of the nation, trouble. Absolute trouble. You can look back through all of history, and whenever you see that happening, you know it's bad. And when you start conjoining them the way these folks are, you know that they're manipulating religion in order to accomplish political goals. You say, well, they don't make any bones about that. Well, it's about to them, abortion and gay rights and what have you. But ultimately, they want judges that are going to affirm the economic lords of this country. And they got the shock troops, the grunts in all of this, that all get all worked up because of what two guys do in a bedroom or what a woman does with her own body and her own reproductive organs and choices and stuff like that. Or, you know, somebody showing their breast on television. I mean, that's what they're worked up about. But when you see who's behind this, in a very strong manner, it's always, as I said, the lords of the economy, the people that are at the command center of this nation's economy that aren't satisfied with the billions and billions and billions of dollars that they already control and own and manipulate the political system through. They want to reduce all of us to peasantry. Or maybe not all of us. I mean, maybe 20% to a third of us will wind up with the folks with the nice cars and the nice houses. But on the other hand, the other two-thirds, it's a race to the bottom. They're eroding our standard of living. They're eroding our wages. You know, I mean, I go places sometimes. I was at this restaurant to celebrate a friend's birthday last night in Ann Arbor called Grazzi's. And I'm thinking, whoa, doesn't look like anything's wrong here. Yeah, everything, just the wine's flowing and, you know, the salads with the radicchio and all that kind of stuff are just, you know, being served and all of that. It doesn't look so bad. But, you know, I would say, let me see, there were six of us. Three of the people, two of the people had just lost their jobs, and one was just had a position, an economic position, that's, you know, one little twist the wrong way, and he would have been in bad shape as well. Well, all right, also, when religion, rather than that private sense of one's spirituality coming together with a community of fellow religionists to celebrate or pray or whatever people do in those places, churches and mosques and synagogues and temples and all of that, when they start wanting to control the political mechanism, it's a recipe for disaster. When religion, instead of being having that pure spiritual quality to it, takes on that in-your-face, and even worse, in-your-business, in our business. They want to tell us what we can read and see. They want to tell us what we can put inside of our bodies. They want to take women who don't agree with their version of theology and biology and tell them what they can do with their body and their reproductive organs. These are the worst fascists, even if they don't even recognize themselves. And they're not going to utter the word. It's not going to be uniforms and, you know, Heil whoever. You know, that's old-fashioned. But it's going to have a result just as disastrous. And that's why, and I use this phrase a lot when I talk about these people, that's why these people are toxic. Toxic in the sense that they're poisonous to the body politic, to our communities. They're always starting hassles. I mean, did you ever find, like, people on the you know, liberals or people like that saying, you know, going around saying, you have to have an abortion. You got too many kids. That doesn't happen. And by the way, you know, remember where we were talking about conservatives. The only thing, conservatives have always conserved the status quo. And people with no vision of a different way for this country to be run than the way it is now. Whew, what do you think about that? Anyway, so things like this keep popping up. The Air Force Academy, still recovering from rape and sexual harassment scandals, is facing charges that some Christian cadets have bullied and berated Jews and students of other religious backgrounds. They've received 55 complaints. 90% of the academy's 4,300 cadets identify themselves as Christian. The school's commandant, Brigadier General Johnny A. Wida, describes himself as a born-again Christian. And just one thing after another. So, religion, get thee back to thy house of worship. That's what I say. My name is Peter Werby. I'd like you to join me on Night Call, 313-298-WRIF, and we have for you email as well at calltalkyes@yahoo.com. All right, let's take some calls right now, and let's see whether or not, in fact, you're going to have to start, people listening from far away are going to have to call, or rather, email calltalkyes@yahoo.com and tell us whether this is happening. All right, our first caller is James from Westland. James, hi, it's Peter Werby. You're on the air.
Hey, Pete.
Hi.
I wanted to touch on a couple of things you've been talking about. First, about the music and the religion, all at the same time. You heard of the band Bad Religion, right?
Sure.
Well, in 1993, they came out with a song called American Jesus. Talked a lot of the topics you've been covering as of late. You don't have to play it. I'm just stating a fact here.
I got you. Go ahead.
About how the fascist right wing want to control both religion and politics at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Wow, what a great... I'm going to use that. Patrol it. I love that. Okay, I'm stealing that from you, James. Go ahead.
Oddly enough, in the book of Revelations,
mm-hmm,
it actually warns us about this in the last days. There's going to be a new world order that church and state will become one.
Well,
and that would be one of the signs.
Well, that sounds like one to look out for.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And this is a bad thing. So you think that the government would try to do exactly the opposite of this.
Uh-huh.
And the church would try to do the opposite of this as well. And what's happening?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, come on, you've said it, you know? And I think that's odd, don't you?
Well, I do, and I don't know if we even have to ascribe it up to biblical things. I mean, we have a certain vision that's come about for the last 300 or 400 years about how we'd like government to run. And we'd like it to run democratically. We'd like to have respect for other people's rights. And we're harsh on people that want to enforce their views as a totality. And so these are the totalitarians. And the totalitarians are completely out of touch with the direction that, you know, that we've thought about governance. So, I mean, the way, if it's described in other books, that's great. All right, James, thank you very much. Appreciate you calling. 313-298-WRIF, which made me think of something. Oh, yeah, actually, JV is writing into calltalkyes@yahoo.com. He says, try gargling with a little salt water. It should help. Where the hell do I get salt water? You can deal with it. Yeah, the voice is okay. And then, I don't know, I can always just go into, you know, it's only business. But he says, please mention the two video clips at theocracywatch.org. They explain so well the birth of the moral majority and the hate they breed. Yeah, that's a good site, by the way. If you go to my site, peterwerby.com, PETERWERBE.com, I have a link. I think that's my featured link, theocracywatch.org. So check it out. All right, Mr. Jay Hudson, our producer and phone screener. Okay, there's the next one. Wayne in Westland. Wayne, hi, it's Peter Werby. You're on the air.
Hey, how you doing?
Doing good. Welcome.
Good to talk to you. I just wanted to bring up something about Howard Dean.
Sure.
And how all the right-wingers are ripping on him for gesturing about Rush Limbaugh.
Mm-hmm. Now, Jay, he made fun of him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, the thing is, in the past, Rush Limbaugh always said that all drug addicts, they should lock them up and throw away the key.
Mm-hmm.
But that's all right for him to be a drug addict?
Well, yeah. I mean, they're such a pack of hypocrites. I mean, they're always talking about the sanctity of the family. And, you know, some of these places, I think of the Bible Belt. I think, like, Alabama has one of the highest divorce rates. And all of those areas that are real high in church attendance are also, they've got real high... listenership or viewership to things like Desperate Housewives.
Yeah, but they're saying, well, he should be more sensitive because he's a doctor. Just about Rush Limbaugh's problem, when Rush Limbaugh can talk all this, you know, stuff about drug addicts should be locked up and they throw away the key and all that.
Well, yeah, I mean, he talks trash about people, makes fun of people, and he's in the media. He's fair game. And I'll tell you, any little foible that I may have that people can find out about, I guess I'd be fair game as well. All right, thank you very much. See if we can get some other calls on that. Here's Al from Inkster. Al, it's Peter Werby. You're on the air.
How you doing tonight?
Doing good. Thank you.
You know, there was a time when the evangelicals were part of the progressive movement in this country.
Hmm.
Way back in the late 1800s at the turn of the century.
Oh, yeah, that's right. In fact,
William Jennings Bryan, with his famous speech at the Democratic Convention in 1896, that he would not see labor crucified upon a cross of gold with a crown of silver thorns pressed down upon its brow.
Yeah, and actually the Pledge of Allegiance was written by a Christian socialist.
And William Jennings Bryan was such a pacifist that he was a member. He was a member of Woodrow Wilson's cabinet when World War One broke out, and he resigned because he could not take part in the war.
Huh. Well, you know that, I mean, in a lot of ways, it's no different now. I mean, you can find within all of the churches real important and dramatic strands of peace and social justice. Remember, it was the head of Bush's church, was it the Methodist, that said he opposed Bush's going to war in Iraq, and the Pope opposed the war, and all sorts of groups have commissions to welcome gays and to make their congregations integrated. But all you hear, and I don't know who makes up the biggest proportion of this, but certainly the squeakiest of the squeaky wheels are the these guys that want to take over the government, and they have. When you look at the Bush regime, who is it filled with? Religious nuts, including Bush, when he talks about evolution, he says, well, the jury's still out. There's no jury out on evolution.
No, it's pretty much proven itself. You know, it's a testable scientific theory.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you can't come up with a scientific theory that tests for, you know, the invisible hand of God.
Exactly, exactly. So, I mean, I think I've said, we've talked about this for a few weeks. These people that formerly were on the margins of this society where they belong, and they should, you know, let them do their thing. That's it. No one says to them, you can't function the way you want in terms of the principles that you see as important for yourself. And you can't, there's no reason you can't use gentle persuasion to attempt to convince people that your view is a good way of functioning. That's what I do. But, I mean, it's one thing to...
That's what we all do as activists. So, I mean, that's...
Yeah.
You know.
Here, on one hand, you can go and have... See, here there's like these right-wingers, including, remember, it was... what's his name? Randall Terry, who was a spokesperson for the...
a big pro-right to life.
Well, he's bigger than a big pro to life. I mean, he was involved in all sorts of destructive activities around women's clinics and what have you.
Advocating murder?
Yeah, yeah. Anyways, what one can do would be to understand. For instance, say that you, I mean, I know people. I know Christians who have what they call the seamless garment. They're opposed to abortion. They're opposed to war. They're opposed to capital punishment. They don't want the state to enforce their view of abortion. They want to create the social conditions, which means pretty much eliminating poverty, where every child would be wanted. Most abortions,
that goes in with Jesus' teachings.
Yeah,
because, you know, he threw the money lenders out of the temple.
Right.
The only business people he hung around with were prostitutes, and he, you know, he always said, "How you treat the least of these, how you treat me."
Right. You made me forget my point, but it's okay. I've got a million of them. All right, Al, I got to do a little business here. Speaking of businessmen, thank you for joining us. We'll be right back.
If you think it's too late in life to earn the college degree you want, listen to this. Now you can go to a college designed for busy working adults. It's University of Phoenix, the nation's largest private accredited university. In most cases, you can earn a bachelor's or master's degree in just 2 to 3 years. To find out how, call 1-800-664-1391. At the University of Phoenix Detroit campus, the small classroom settings are designed for working adults with busy lives. With their efficient learning model, you'll cover more material in less time, going to convenient classes in the evening or on the weekend. At University of Phoenix, you can do this. For a complimentary brochure on degree programs in business, technology, nursing, education, and more, call University of Phoenix now, 1-800-664-1391. Programs vary by campus. Classes are forming, so call now, 1-800-664-1391. That's 1-800-664-1391. Anglers, get ready to cast your line for a big money this year because the WRAF Fishing Championship Series is coming. The series consists of 4 tournaments this year: walleye, catfish, bass, and muskie. In each tournament, anglers compete for cash and prizes, and the team with the best average finish in the 4 tournament series will also win $1,500 cash, plus the title of 2005 WRAF Great Lakes Fishing Series Champions. After each event, competitors get to kick back and party at Big Al Sports Bar for the awards and more chances to win prizes from the RIF. The first tournament kicks off on April 23rd at the Lake Erie Metro Park for the WRAF Walleye Championship. The teams start their boats at 6:30 a.m. and will weigh their catch at 4 p.m. 2 to 3 person teams compete for thousands in cash and prizes, but one team will finish the day holding the championship trophy. To sign up or to find out about a sponsorship, call 248-591-6841 today or go to WRIF.com to get a registration form. Become the WRAF Great Lakes Fishing Series Champion. Call 248-591-6841 today.
You're listening to WRIF.com.
A night of black leather, hot bands, great food, wicked bikes, and more. Plus, you can bid on a 2005 Harley-Davidson Fat Boy. The 6th Annual MDA Black and Blue Ball. May 6th at the Ritz-Carlton in Dearborn. Call for tickets at 586-274-9000. From Ford Motor Company, Motor City Harley-Davidson, Pepsi Bottling Group, and 101 WRIF.
Riff, rocks.
Detroit's Rock Station 101 WRIF and WRIF.com bring you the hottest deals in the Motor City. At WRIF.com, you are only one click away from dining at some of your favorite restaurants for only half price. Dine online and eat for less. Save a ton of money with some of Metro Detroit's best restaurants. Like Clubhouse Tavern, located in the fabulous Fisher Building, offering great food at great prices. Log on to www.wrif.com. You can purchase full-price gift certificates to area restaurants for only half price. But quantities are limited, so you better act fast. For more details, log on to WRIF.com and be sure to check out even more special offers and savings. Like Buddy's Pizza, come into any of Buddy's 9 locations today. Enjoy one of the nation's best pizza places as recognized by the Food Network. Buddy's, Detroit's number one pizza since 1946. Log on today and save at WRIF.com.
Every Tuesday, get double shots of the best riff rock.
The way you want it.
Rock. See, I told you there was a rational explanation.
Two for Tuesday on 101 WRIF.
Riff Rocks.
Like what you hear on the riff? Then why not get your riff rock to go? Download all your...
We're back with more Night Call on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's Peter Werby.
All right, thank you very much, and welcome back. We're talking about the right wing's plan, particularly these right wing evangelicals who say they're going to reclaim America for Christ. They're dominionist, as they call themselves, and they are working assiduously. Well, I don't know what the hell that means. You know, they're like real hard. I never finished college, so I tend to use those big words because I have an inferiority complex or something. Anyways, they're working real hard, and the head of them, D. James Kennedy, used to be was a former Arthur Murray dance instructor, now a minister. He's got a $37 million a year empire out of Fort Lauderdale. Our job is to reclaim America for Christ as the vice regents of God. Yeah, so, I mean, who appointed him? That's what I want to know. Where did he, you know, Mr. Kennedy, you know, what does he get, this big voice or something? We are, as the vice regents of God, we are to exercise godly dominion and influence over our neighborhoods, our schools, our government, our literature and arts, our sports arenas, our entertainment media, our news media, our scientific endeavors, in short, over every aspect and institution of human society. There is the totalitarian view. You know, this is like Mein Kampf. Now, Hitler wrote all this stuff, and there it was, said what he wanted to do. And people went, yeah, whatever. You know, we've got this little German Republic in the 1920s, and we got to worry about some wacko right-winger. It's always the right-winger. And remember, so you got this third of the population that will always support fascism, whether it's in Germany, like they did, and that's all he got. But then the conservatives have always supported fascism wherever it came up. Every country, when the fascists were poised to take power in Germany, in Italy, in Spain, in Japan, in Argentina, wherever, they would hold their nose, you know, but they always backed the fascists. You say, well, didn't the liberals back the communists? No. Immediately upon seizing the power of the state, in like in Eastern Europe, they would eliminate the liberals because they knew, you know, they would object to what was going on, the way the country was being run. When Lenin and Stalin and Trotsky seized the power of the Russian state, same thing. They just eliminated everybody on the left that could have been their opponents. But here. This is from Joe in Sterling Heights. I listen to you every Sunday night, but disagree with you on about everything you say. I always wonder that. I mean, what does he think? I mean, what did I say that wasn't true? Comments for you. There's two, but I'm only going to go one. You say that the right wing wants to control our lives by telling us what movies we can see and who we can or cannot marry, what we can read and what we can or cannot do with our bodies, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, that's what the guy said. So, you know, the ex... dance instructor with Arthur Murray, who's now, you know, going to run our lives. And he says, doesn't the left wing also try to control our lives by telling us who we have to hire, who we have to admit to private organizations, how much of our money we can keep, et cetera, et cetera? Well, the government does the latter. The government decides, what the taxation rate is and all of that. But that's a different question. But in terms of things that are called public accommodation, that means that there is a whole nation, and one sector cannot be injured at the, how would you put this, at the whim or the whatever of a larger group. In other words, you can't, we decided you can't hold people as slaves. We're willing to go to war over that. And part of the democratic revolutions, remember we were revolutionaries, was the democratic ideal. Fraternity, what, I'm going to forget all of this now. Fraternity, you know, this will be one of these people say, you're so unprepared. I mean, I got to remember everything. I just can't do it. Fraternity, liberty, equality. Okay? And fraternity is very important there because that suggests an egalitarianism, that we all at the level, at least politically, are equals. So you can't have segregation. You can't deny women or blacks the right to vote. You know, you can't forbid people to join labor unions. You can't, the government can't tell people that they can't go out on demonstrations, stuff like that. And so it is with private organizations that are licensed by the state. You want to have a liquor license, for instance. Joe, if you and me and 10 others of us are going to have the goofballs, we're going to call it the goofballs, all right? And we're going to meet. And we're going to meet at your house, and we're going to meet at our house. And we, you know, we drink some beers and watch some football and stuff like that. And I was just talking to somebody from Macedonia. A Macedonian American says he wants to join our group. And we say, we don't want him. We don't want him. We just like the guys just like us. He can't go into court and say they're discriminating against me because I'm Macedonian. However, if we get a building and we apply for a liquor license, well, then that brings in the state. So there's no way in the world that people, and who we have to hire. Again, that extends the democratic revolution. That is something that is all-inclusive. To say that you don't have to hire Macedonians, or you can get away with that. Or you can not hire somebody because of the color of their skin, or because of their religion. There's a world of difference between that and the right-wing censorship. I mean, come on. We're talking on one hand about a country that wants to be all-inclusive and a country that these insane right-wingers, these religio-fascists want, where that is so narrow. Let me see. Okay, I got to go back and get a call. That's what I have to say. All right, this is going to be an interesting call. This is Courtney. Courtney, hi, you're on the air. Courtney is the March 2004 cover girl of Penthouse and the March 2004 pet runner-up. Hey, how you doing?
Pet runner-up, yep.
Yeah. Jay said you wanted to be on the show.
I do.
How come?
I love your radio station. I've also been trying to get on the morning show with Drew and Mike.
Yeah.
They must think I'd be a boring person to interview.
Well, I don't know. I mean, they're usually into kind of interviewing who they call babes.
Maybe they don't think I'm a babe. Maybe they haven't seen my issue.
So you're on the cover of Penthouse, and then is there, so to speak, a spread of you inside the issue?
There is. Yep, I was on the cover and centerfold of March 2002, as well as cover and centerfold March 2004.
Yeah.
So, lots of pictures of me.
What do you think? Where does that pays? I mean, that's a goodly sum that you get paid, right?
Yeah, it is. They pay us very well. We make a lot of money doing promotion, so we get to go to different clubs and meet people, and it's fun.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't bother you. Guys are always kind of going.
No.
Are they a little more discreet than that now?
Some people, you know, you write something on a headshot and they tell you they don't like what you wrote and they get a little irate, so that can be annoying.
Yeah.
But otherwise, everybody's really nice. We've met some very interesting characters.
Is this a career or just some, I mean, where does this go?
I'm using this. This has helped me pay for school. So I've been in school for a while, and I'm just finishing. I have a degree in psychology from Michigan.
Uh-huh.
I have a respiratory therapy degree, and I'm just finishing my pre-med requirements so I can apply to medical school.
So is that unusual? I mean, there's always this debate. I mean, I've even interviewed people that said good numbers of people that are in what they call the sex industry aren't druggies and aren't battered women, but rather just women that figure they can make a little bit better income doing this than waiting tables.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great way to make money, and I mean, I'm not a stripper, but I like going to the strip clubs and watching the girls, and I don't take drugs. The only drug I love is sex.
Okay, and have you ever made like X-rated movies?
No, I haven't.
Would you do that?
No.
Okay, so there is different sectors of this industry. So you're essentially a model.
Yeah, a model.
Yeah.
I do commercial modeling as well as nude modeling. So, you can see me in Penthouse or on the cover of a horse trade magazine.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. And parents, did they get to see this?
You know, I showed my dad my first issue with post-it notes on the nude parts, but even with that, he thought it was way too racy. He wasn't too happy.
Racy? Courtney, I mean, I haven't seen a Penthouse in a while, but racy is kind of like a word that somebody from his generation would use. I mean, it's all, Penthouse doesn't leave a bit to the imagination.
No, but why would you want to?
I guess not. I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I don't know. Why don't you ask me some questions? I'm kind of out of questions.
Okay. What do you look for in a woman?
What do I look for in a woman? Her hair. I mean, I'm married. I've been married for a long time. I don't know. What do I look? I'm a guy. I just I don't know. I'm getting older, so I look for older women.
Older women, older. You know, as you approach 30, you hit your sexual peak, and I can see why men date younger women. They're not as hard to satisfy. I'm 29. I'm almost 30, so I'm in my sexual peak, and I'm insatiable.
Okay. Courtney, you're almost 30, and you were on the cover of Penthouse. I mean, I thought they would consider you an old lady.
I'm young at heart. No, I'm comfortable with my sexuality. When I was in my early 20s, I wasn't comfortable with anything.
Yeah.
But as I've matured and I've become a lot more comfortable with my body and sexuality and
Well, you know, one of the things for a long time, I mean, when women started really speaking up, they always said that magazines like Playboy exploited women. But I don't know. I mean, it always struck me that beautiful women, the images of them were almost more controlled guys. I mean, guys are there buying these magazines because it's like something they can't obtain, right? Does that make any sense?
Because even though I think there is a lot of mystery looking at a magazine, I mean, it's not like there are a lot of interesting poses and we have interesting clothes on too. And, I think there is people, they can imagine what the woman would be like in bed and or whatever else. They could, I don't know, maybe some guys imagine what it would be like to have a conversation with a centerfold. I don't know about that. But and, you know, not only that, but you know, people can buy magazines and they can masturbate, and that's a lot safer than going out and having, casual sex.
I guess. Well, I mean, I think some guys would like to have casual sex and can't really do it. But let me just tell people, you're listening to Night Call Show. Courtney Taylor's on the line. She's the March 2004 cover girl for Penthouse. And, I don't know. I actually had another thought about all this. Oh, yeah. I mean, are there any modesty issues here? I mean,
you mean, do I have any modesty?
Yeah, I guess you don't, huh?
Well, I mean, it's different. Like, I could never do what these girls do at a strip club, getting naked and dancing for people. I could never do that. I am pretty shy, in general. I'm a self-conscious person, but in front of the camera, I'm not really self-conscious.
Well, how about... How you appeared on the cover of Penthouse, how close was it to how you look? I mean, I know with, obviously they go at it with Photoshop and all that, but is it...
Actually, Penthouse does not airbrush. Playboy airbrushes, but Penthouse does not airbrush. You know, obviously we have makeup on for the layouts, and but there's no airbrushing in Penthouse.
Mm-hmm.
So it's all done with, you know, lights and makeup and things like that. And, I mean... Yeah, I look different in person than I do. I mean, I guess I can do the dramatic eye makeup and look similar to what I look like in the layout. Well, there are some pictures in there, especially in 2002, where I don't have any makeup on. There's one picture where I'm on the beach and I'm not wearing any makeup, and that was in the 2002 issue.
Well, all right, Courtney, I'm going to cut you loose, but, you know, actually, on the morning show, that's where they're going to want to talk about sex and sexuality and all that
stuff.
Oh,
I'd love to talk about it. That's all I think about.
Well, that's what they want to hear there. We're a little more serious on this, but I'm glad I got a chance to talk to you. And I will drop a note to Drew and Mike's producer and tell them they should get a hold of you.
Do you want me to give you my phone number?
Well, you shouldn't do it on... no, our producer, Jay Hudson, has it. You don't want to give it on the air, I don't think.
Oh, am I still on the air?
Yeah. Yeah, you're still on the air. Thank you, Courtney.
Thank you. It was nice talking to you.
All right, nice talking to you. Oh, I don't know. It's a strange world. I don't know. Yeah, I suppose more money than waiting tables, and it's going to go to med school. Hey, let's see. Are we going right here? I think so. Here is Daryl in Clinton Township. Daryl, hi. It's Peter Werby.
Oh, Pete, talk about bringing the show down, man. Oh, just listening there. I like hot chicks as much as the next guy, but dang. Oh. Anyway, how you doing tonight?
Doing good.
Listen, I'm a Christian myself. I, especially before the election, would watch, like, I like to watch some of the preachers on TV, and I seen on TBN, which is, I'm sure you know, that Christian Broadcasting Network.
Yeah.
And it was so horribly disgusting to see them, like, I mean, they just basically said everything but please vote for Bush. I mean, it was just, you know, if you want, you know, people, you know, if you want gays to take over, and if you want abortions to be, every street corner is going to be an abortion clinic. And, I mean, a lot of Christians I know don't share that view, and I don't think that my views or anyone who claims to be a Christian should think that, you know, especially the way they resound the founding fathers as being, oh, they were all Christian, blah, blah, blah. But they were also did not want the church taking over the state. And I don't think just because I'm a Christian and I have certain preferences to the way I live my life that anyone else should be subjected to those, especially through legislation. And for the people that they, like, you know, jump on board with, the Bushes and the Tom DeLays and all these people, you know, who claim to be Christian, they are the worst examples I've ever seen of Christianity in my life. I mean, I definitely want to see Christianity used for, you know, peace and social justice and not people, you know, taking over and, like, condemning others, you know, all the sinners out there.
Mm-hmm. Well,
it makes me sick.
Well, I'll tell you, I mean, what you're saying is like most Christians that I know, but I know the Christians I know are just through, like I always said, through the peace and social justice movement, as are the Jews and as are the Muslims and as are the Buddhists. They're interested in taking the aspects, I mean, well, you've heard the phrase, a social witness, that you do good works in the world, not trying to force people to, you know, submit to your view of things.
And the thing is, too, is if you look over in the Middle East, the way that the religious influences in the government, it's obviously a disaster, and it just upsets me to no end. And by the way, I heard your interviews this morning on another station.
Yeah.
Fantastic interviews, and to be honest with you, it really depressed me all day to hear some of the things that, you know, they're planning to do. So I agree.
Oh, yeah, that Bruce Gagnon on the weapons in space. Yeah, actually, those are going to be repeated at 1 a.m. tonight.
Yeah, they were great interviews. I encourage everyone to listen. Good job, Pete. Take care, buddy.
All right, thank you very much. Appreciate your call. All right, here, Shane in Redford writes, it sounds like these right-wingers want to spread, quote, freedom everywhere else but here. Well, Shane, it's actually, they're doing about the same in places like Iraq as well. Question for you, Peter. I'm curious on how the no-confidence vote works in England and what you think about adopting something similar here. Well, rather than explaining that, I mean, it's a parliamentary system. And the party, you form a government by getting a majority of the single house, the parliament. Same thing's in Canada. And when you don't, you have to call new elections, or you have to call elections, like, say, in England every 5 years at least. But sometimes, like in Italy, where they used to have government after government after government, what do you think about adopting something similar here? I don't know. I mean, there's pros and cons. Obviously, there's stability. But what happens is that sometimes governments just do incredibly awful things, and then they go, well, you know, and then they go on, and you know, there are. I remember, like presidents will say, "Well, I take complete responsibility for that," and you know, for something, I don't know. I don't want to go on with this. Actually, I mean, it's too complicated. I don't think it's going to work. A couple of people writing in saying, somebody from Miami, calltalkyes@yahoo.com. Oh, I want that few minutes of my life back. Miss Penthouse, you know, I was being too nice. I'm not a stripper. I don't take drugs. Peter says, would you do X-rated movie? Oh, Peter, reel yourself back in now. I don't know. I'm curious why people make the choices that they do. I mean, we were just before, if you just like join us or something, we had this Miss Penthouse on. And she said she showed the, and I mean, you know, I'm a little bashful myself. I mean, Penthouse is, you know, down and dirty. I mean, I guess everything is now. So, I mean, you're not showing any discreet shots, any art shots with simply the outline of a woman's breast. I mean, it's all right out there very frequently. They, in Penthouse, they have, men with the women. I didn't want to, you know, I was too embarrassed even to ask her that. So, I don't know. You can't get that 5 minutes of your life back. But I guess, and please tell me, no one's written into calltalkyes@yahoo.com, that have we fixed things now? Remember, we were trying to make sure that my voice was equal to that of our callers and our, I should get this right on, right away. This person's been waiting a long time. And I hopefully we fix that. Here's Rich in Boulder, Colorado. Rich, hi, it's Peter Werby. You're on the air. Sorry for making you wait so long.
Oh, no worries.
Hey, well, two things. Does it sound on the internet now like our voices are equal, or is there still a problem?
I haven't got too much of the show tonight, so I don't know. But one thing, I'm on hold.
What about when you're on hold?
I'm not hearing you.
Oh, man. We can't figure that one out. I mean, the engineers come in here. They do everything they do, and they every time. I mean, I've been in here where you can hear them on hold, but we'll talk to them again. Okay, go ahead, Rich. What's up?
Well, yeah, I was just calling to say happy Earth Day.
Oh, happy Earth Day to you.
And I just thought I'd drop a couple of things that you can do to make Earth Day every day.
Sure.
Some things that I do. One thing is we use a sweeper in the house, a carpet sweeper, and a vacuum, and we still use a vacuum, but we just pull it out, you know, once or twice a month instead of twice a week or something. Another thing you can do that is really good is the compact fluorescent light bulb, which uses about a quarter of the energy as a incandescent, the typical NTC. And another one is the use of Tupperware when you go out to eat. Instead of getting a styrofoam box, you can just bring along a Tupperware. You've got your own to-go container that can be used over and over again.
Well, you know what? The I think the main important is one of the things we have to do. I mean, Bush has this energy bill in the hopper now. That, of course, it's just a big giveaway to the energy companies. It's going to wind up costing the average citizen more money, maybe even raise the price of gas. But some of these things, which if one as an individual feels motivated to do it. Well, I'm sorry, the middle one about the fluorescent bulbs. I've been replacing all of mine, both because of energy saving, but also just because it's a nuisance having to change bulbs all the time. These things last 5 to 7 years. But what was the first thing you suggested? Oh, yeah, about the vacuum cleaner. The vacuum cleaner and the Tupperware. Those things are what I call gestures. And I'm all for gestures because, in a way, that's how you define yourself. I mean, the whole philosophy of existentialism, you make choices as you would make, as you would have everyone make. And even if the whole world is awash in disposable plastics, you're gonna use, well, a non-disposable plastic, a Tupperware. But until we have social consensus that we are poisoning ourselves and we may be reaching the tipping point in some areas, some even critical areas of the environment that may devastate the planet, what essentially are the gestures of individuals aren't going to amount to much.
Well, I just tonight I showed a great film at the co-op here in Boulder. It's called The End of Suburbia.
Yeah.
And the basic premise is that the way we've set up our living situation is the allocation of resources in history. And, you know, I'm always calling about the bicycle, and I'll say it again. I think it's the single most efficient. It's more than a gesture. You know, you're voting with your dollars.
Well, I think, too, is like I say, exemplary acts, you choosing as you'd want everyone to choose. I don't mean to put it down, but, I mean, it can't, and I know you don't disagree with this, it can't take the place of a whole society saying we cannot continue to throw millions of tons of styrofoam into our environment a year and think that at some point that there's not going to be a consequence. All right, I got to run. Thank you very much. Motor City Madman. He's, I think, going to be in Bowling for Columbine 2. I'll tell you about that when we come back.
If you think it's too late in life to earn the college degree you want, listen to this. Now you can go to a college designed for busy working adults. It's University of Phoenix, the nation's largest private accredited university. In most cases, you can earn a bachelor's or master's degree in just 2 to 3 years. To find out how, call 1-800-664-1391. At the University of Phoenix Detroit campus, the small classroom settings are designed for working adults with busy lives. With their efficient learning model, you'll cover more material in less time, going to convenient classes in the evening or on the weekend. At University of Phoenix, you can do this. For a complimentary brochure on degree programs in business, technology, nursing, education, and more, call University of Phoenix now, 1-800-664-1391. Programs vary by campus. Classes are forming, so call now, 1-800-664-1391. That's 1-800-664-1391. Anglers, get ready to cast your line for a big money this year because the WRIF Fishing Championship Series is coming. The series consists of 4 tournaments this year: walleye, catfish, bass, and muskie. In each tournament, anglers compete for cash and prizes, and the team with the best average finish in the 4 tournament series will also win $1,500 cash, plus the title of 2005 WRIF Great Lakes Fishing Series Champions. After each event, competitors get to kick back and party at Big Al Sports Bar for the awards and more chances to win prizes from the RIF. The first tournament kicks off on April 23rd at the Lake Erie Metro Park for the WRIF Walleye Championship. The teams start their boats at 6:30 a.m. and will weigh their catch at 4 p.m. 2 to 3 person teams compete for thousands in cash and prizes, but one team will finish the day holding the championship trophy. To sign up or to find out about a sponsorship, call 248-591-6841 today or go to WRIF.com to get a registration form. Become the WRIF Great Lakes Fishing Series Champion. Call 248-591-6841 today.
WRIF.com.
Take to the ice with 101 WRIF and Labatt Blues 21 and over Summer Hockey Challenge. Games run in June at rinks across Detroit with a 3-game guarantee. All skill levels are welcome. More info available at WRIF.com or call Suburban Training Center at 248-888-1400. Get hockey with Labatt Blue and 101 WRIF.
Rip rocks.
A night of black leather, hot bands, great food, wicked bikes, and more. Plus, you can bid on a 2005 Harley-Davidson Fat Boy. The 6th annual MDA Black and Blue Ball. May 6th at the Ritz-Carlton in Dearborn. Call for tickets at 586-274-9000. From Ford Motor Company, Motor City Harley-Davidson, Pepsi Bottling Group, and 101 WRIF.
Detroit's Rock Station 101 WRIF and WRIF.com bring you the hottest deals in the Motor City. At WRIF.com, you are only one click away from dining at some of your favorite restaurants for only half price. Dine online and eat for less. Save a ton of money with some of Metro Detroit's best restaurants, like the Shark Club on Ford Road, just east of Canton Center Road in Canton. Log on to www.wrif.com. You can purchase full-price gift certificates to area restaurants for only half price. But quantities are limited, so you better act fast. For more details, log on to WRIF.com and be sure to check out even more special offers and savings. Like Buddy's Pizza, come into any of Buddy's 9 locations today. Enjoy one of the nation's best pizza places as recognized by the Food Network. Buddy's, Detroit's number one pizza since 1946. Log on today and save at WRIF.com.
Every Tuesday, get double shots of the best riff rock.
The way you want it.
I'm up enough. Maybe I should pump myself down. Talking some about the Christian evangelicals who are going to reclaim America for Christ. They say, here's their leader, a former Arthur Murray dance instructor, now the head of a $37 million a year evangelical empire. D. James Kennedy, our job is to reclaim America for Christ. He says, as the vice regents of God, no one has really commented on that. I mean, the arrogance of that statement. We are to exercise godly dominion and influence over our neighborhoods, our schools, our government, our literature and arts, our sports arenas, our entertainment media, our news media, our scientific endeavors, in short, over every aspect and institution of human society. Well, I guess if you're a vice regent of God, who in the hell appointed him? I have no idea. But maybe you get to do that. But this is dangerous stuff. This is by definition of totalitarianism. This is like comparable to Mein Kampf. I mean, he laid it all out, what he's going to do. It doesn't make any bones about it, just like Hitler didn't. All right, Motor City Madman, Ted Nugent. There was a lot of controversy about Bowling for Columbine as well. Michael Moore's film before Fahrenheit 9/11. And at the end, a totally pathetic Charlton Heston is, what do they call it, ambushed or whatever by Moore. And looks like the, I don't know, kind of just disturbed, weird character that he is. So coming up right behind him, I guess if Michael Moore makes Bowling for Columbine 2, our own Motor City Madman, Ted Nugent, is going to be right there. He is at the 2005 International Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas, right? This is the International Consumer Electronics Show. This is not an NRA show. So he starts yelling. Remember Heston, when he's got this rifle and he's yelling, you know, my dead cold fingers. This is psychopathology, folks. You know, it's not like any of these people are under direct assault. In fact, many of these people that are the almost wacko gun nuts about self-defense aren't in any need of self-defense. They've got their kind of government in now, Bush and all of them. They usually live in areas where they're the least dangerous of all. So here's what this is so amazing. Where was this? With an assault weapon in each hand, rocker and guns rights advocate Ted Nugent urged National Rifle Association members to be hardcore radical extremists. He drew the most cheers when he told gun owners that they should never give up their right to bear arms and should use their guns to protect themselves if needed. He screamed to the applause of, as he was shouting, "Remember the Alamo! Shoot 'em! To show you how radical I am, I want carjackers dead. I want rapists dead. I want burglars dead. I want child molesters dead. I want the bad guys dead. No court case, no parole, no early release. I want them dead. Get a gun, and when they attack you, shoot them." Wow. Pretty weird stuff. For one thing, remember the Alamo? I mean, couldn't he come up with a victory? This is where the Americans with guns that were, you know, part of this imperial overreach got wiped out, right? What the hell were they doing in Mexican territory to begin with? This is, you know, just big land grab, all that was. And so he wants to shoot all these people. And, of course, this kind of, and this shows you, this is more fascism. No trials or anything like that. Because these are people that, I mean, everybody has the right to self-defense. And if you possess a weapon under the laws that we operate under, well, then, yeah, if somebody is trying to use deadly force against you, you can do something to them. Someone's breaking in your house, and there's somebody standing there, and they go, oh, there's you. You can't kill them. I mean, this is such awful advice. Forget about any ethical or, you know, psycho stuff going on. I mean, this is telling people to put themselves in jeopardy of prosecution themselves rather than that of the person doing the burglary. No court case, right. And I want child molesters dead. Well, I don't think anybody has any sympathy for child molesters, but what do they mean? You want kids to have guns or what? Or that posses go and rather than a legal trial and just shoot everybody? I mean, this is not the kind of, let me see if I can quickly get that. I mean, there's something wrong here. There's something wrong in a country that produces twisted human beings like Nugent. If anybody knows him, tell him I said that on the air, will you? that resonates so much with people, that there is so much frustration or anger or fear. And again, the people that are applauding, they're not like getting carjacked. They're not getting raped. They're not, people aren't breaking into their houses. And, you know, child molestation, as awful as it is, I mean, isn't really a common occurrence. I mean, but to the extent that it is, I mean, think about this. Think about the definitions of society in terms of what goes on in it, so that we have carjacking to the extent that it does, occurs, that there is as many rapes, that this act of aggression against women that has absolutely nothing to do with sexual fulfillment. People that don't have, someone to share their sexual desires, they get Courtney's, magazine, Penthouse, and take care of it themselves. Sex with someone they love, right, themselves. But what rape is about, obviously, is this hideous act of aggression against women. Why is it such a high rate here? Why is there so many carjacking? Why is there burglars away? Why is there so many molestations going on? I mean, and that's why when you have conservatives, they said they want to conserve the status quo. Except for the ones that want to turn it even farther to the right. But let's talk about mainstream conservatives. It's okay the way they are, where the way things are, right? Well, we find out, too, that growing at a rate of about 900 inmates each week, between mid-2003 and mid-2004, the nation's prisons and jails held 2.1 million people, or one in every 138 U.S. residents. So it's the highest absolute number in the world and the highest per capita of any industrial nation. Something's wrong, all right? Something's terribly wrong when we get to that point. I know 138 people. One of them's in jail. Let me think. Yeah, it's true. One of my friends is. I don't know how this other piece got in here, but we can talk about that in a second. Let me cough off air, please. There you go. Over 10,000 are arrested in a dragnet. This happened a while ago, the 14th. The Justice Department on Thursday announced the arrest of more than 10,000 fugitives, many of them accused of violent crimes like murder, rape, kidnapping, and armed robbery, as part of a week-long roundup around the country that concluded earlier this week. So there's 10,000 people in our communities that have committed these acts of violence against the community, individuals which reside in them, and there's that many that they can make the special effort to go get them. And if there's 10,000 that they arrested, how many aren't arrested? Something's real wrong here. Something's going on that's real wrong. And it's not like these, you know, Ted Nugent's or reclaiming, America for Christ the way these Dominionists want. Something way before, beyond that. All right, we got some open lines. 313-298-WRIF. Here's Lou in Northville. Lou, thanks for being so patient. You're on the air. Good evening.
Hey, Peter.
Hi.
Let's start with some questions to you. You jumped a lot of subjects here tonight. And you want to talk about Nugent or you want to go back to the religious part?
You go wherever you want.
All right. You know, I'm going to ask you this. First of all, what is your position on religion? Are you, would you consider yourself spiritual? Are you religious?
No, I'm not religious in the slightest.
No, atheist?
I would say that's an it depends on how you decide. Sometimes, atheist, that's fine. I think that's a fine, upstanding category of humanity, yeah.
Okay. So, in the hierarchy of life, I mean, when you put all us on this earth and you say, okay, we're all here to survive. Where do you believe we came from? I mean, do you believe that there was a greater being that created us, or what?
I have no way to make any assessment. Do you?
Well, I'd have to reflect back on, we call this 2005, and the reason for that is in the year, it's 2005 years from B.C. A.D., so, in both Muslim, Christianity, and Buddhism, which I think, and I don't know that religion very well, but it's more of
something. Yeah, yeah. Anyway.
It all comes back to one thing, that there is somewhere what most people consider as you know, a greater being or a God.
Well, most people do, but so what? I don't see, it doesn't seem to make any sense. It seems to be an imponderable in that sense. One would be agnostic. One doesn't know. I mean, it seems to be an imponderable question. And if you want to take it on the word or authority of people that lived thousands of years ago, that's fine. I just don't happen to do it.
Okay. So let me ask this. There's a church I just went to the other day, or last Sunday, actually, was a church I just stepped into for the first time. I didn't enjoy it that much because I'm not a religious person, but I am spiritual. But the one statement that was made that I thought interesting is that you can take a watch apart, and you can put it in a box, and you can shake that box, and you can shake it to eternity, and there's one thing for sure that will never happen. The pieces will not come back together.
Yeah.
So it had to be a greater being to put us together. And given the fact that a human being has got to be more complex than a watch, you would have to think that there is a greater power out there. Some of us
That's called inductive reasoning. You're starting off with a premise and then thinking of arguments to support it. I mean, who knows? I mean, it's not. Why would I even waste my time thinking about something like this? It doesn't seem to have any bearing on my life. And the only, I mean, it has bearing on other people's lives because that's the kind of philosophical basis that they approach the world. And I have other philosophical bases that are secular. They seem to work for me, and so I'm not going to sit around thinking whether there's a supreme being or not. Because with that and a dollar, you can get on the bus.
I don't know, but you know, your point tonight is, from your point of view, is philosophical. But you're taking it and you're moving it from one direction. You're moving it to a level I would consider, probably most of your callers, if you ask them tonight, would you say I'm going to a negative point of view, or am I going to a positive point of view? Where, in your estimation, do you think you're going?
Well, I'll tell you, I feel that negative. I mean, I feel that the values that one thought of as defining this country are under ferocious attack from the right wing and from these right wing religionists. Not, you know, not all people that believe in religion or spirituality or anything like that. But these are people that are trying to alter the fundamental nature of our country and change it into something that you and I won't recognize. When I read that quote over and over again about these people think that they want to control every aspect of our life, I mean, I've got to only come up with a negation.
Yeah, you know what? To some degree, I do agree with you. There's an extreme. And in anything, there's a power, there's a leader, there's a follower, and there's a people that are going to completely resist. But without somebody leading, you're not going to have the followers. So there aren't extremists, without question. The conservatives, we talked about, I think I heard you earlier talking about the difference between Republicans and Democrats and the white right wings.
Mm-hmm.
I think the Republicans, though conservative, aren't out there pushing it as much as, obviously, as the right wings. But at the same time, they have a strong belief. Bush, for example, has not pushed anything, I don't believe, on this nation from a religious standpoint.
Lou, he is giving billions of dollars of our tax dollars to religious organizations that is totally at variance with the First Amendment.
Well, see, now you're saying things that I don't have knowledge of, so I can't debate.
Well, they are. I mean, he actually has a, I don't know if it's not a department, but some commission on faith-based charities that, you know, this is the way he pays off his constituents with, you know, with our tax dollars.
Well, let me tell you that we could twist and say that about any organization out there. But the fact of the matter is, when we look back and they want to take the, you know, they take In God We Trust off the dollar bill, or you want to take out, you know, God and some of the, you know, we have a national anthem and things of that sort. We start removing.
Well, the Pledge of Allegiance. The court has upheld the right of the government to put In God We Trust onto on the money. On the other hand, you know, a one nation under God was suddenly inserted there. I mean, the pledge had been around for 50 or 60 years, and all of a sudden, during the 1950s, in order to distinguish us from godless communism, that was put in there. I mean, I don't even understand its function. I mean, you know, it just galls me when people are trying to jam their deal on me. I mean, I'm never going to say the Pledge of Allegiance and say under God. I'm going to be a strict constructionist, as they call it. The old fashioned way. All right, Lou, I got to move on. Thank you very much. Appreciate your call. Let's see. We have here, this is our next caller, and I don't have a name. Hi, you're on the air. Who's this?
This is Jason in Ypsilanti Township.
Hi, Jason. Go ahead.
Hi. I guess I wanted to make a point. I guess it segues nicely from the last caller, a few other before. Point about religion as an organizing principle for society. And it's not a new concept, and I guess I can say this in about a minute.
Go ahead.
I think each man or woman has to make a choice whether to engage in kind of a ignorant sort of tyranny, something you're not going to investigate for yourself, history, and make decisions. You're just going to kind of go from your feelings of your, you know, your parents or your family and your immediate community. So you're going to decide whether to make a choice, whether to engage in kind of a self-created idea of how the world works, or you can seek to kind of enter a flawed, uncertain partnership with, you know, the larger community, the history of you know, man and womankind in general, and seek to improve it. And when you call, when you want to create a society that has freedom, freedom can't come from ignorance, it can't come from anger, and it can't come from greed. That's what tyranny is. And law cannot come from selective beliefs that are contrary to history as validated by empirical evidence. You know, if you create law from religion, that's fantasy. And religion is based, because religion is based on faith, not logic. And therefore, it cannot be the basis of law. What people fail to understand from the history of religion is that religions sprang from the need for hierarchy in early man, when early man was organizing, and have always been an instrument to control most people, the masses, through kind of delusion and oversimplification of reality.
Well, they've also, religion has also mainly served the function to justify the power of either the rulers. If you think about it, I mean, that's when it first came up, to sanctify the fact that these formerly egalitarian societies, where most people lived as equals and kind of in a society that you might see sort of presented schematically as a circle, suddenly the pyramid arises and you have a ruling class, and the only way this is justified is that it's sanctified by the formal religions.
Correct. And for example, the earliest societies that we have record of, Egypt and Mesopotamia, both had religions that incorporated their ruling class into the mythos of the religion.
Sure.
Like Zoroastrianism, one of the earliest religions which Christianity drew upon. St. Augustine was a Zoroastrianist. He was a Manichaean, which came from Zoroastrianism before he converted. And he also was kind of a Platonist, a Neoplatonist, and that's where his he wrote The City of God, which is based on Plato's Republic.
And then, as you remember, when Christianity, which was expected the imminent return of Christ, that this
right.
was, these were the last days, but Augustine cut a deal with the Emperor Constantine and made Christianity the official, even though Constantine was a pagan, made Christianity the official religion of the Roman Empire, and it became, rather than a spiritual movement, became this official religion of the state.
Right. There was a practice that every city-state had a sponsor religion, which you know, the Greeks and Romans had, and you know they would back political factions, and Constantine needed that edge. But it, just to finish the point of...
Sure, go ahead, because we may be getting too esoteric for people. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Well, this is one thing. The priests and the elite kind of people who maintain this religious structure in these ancient societies, for example, use their knowledge of science, of mathematics, to predict when eclipses would happen for the sun and the moon. And that was one way they made the public believe they had divine sanction. And in fact, Christopher Columbus did this to intimidate people when he landed, with the same knowledge. So it was carried on all the way through. And the elites of today use their knowledge of psychology and propaganda to achieve the same effect, such as if you read any of the works by Edward Bernays or Walter Lippmann in their books.
Well, let's leave it at that then. I thank you for your call. Thanks for having joined us. Appreciate it. Here is Sandy in Brooklyn. Thanks for calling 313-298-WRIF. Is it Brooklyn, Michigan, or Brooklyn, New York?
Yes, Brooklyn, Michigan.
Okay.
Very interesting. I wrote for and got a bumper sticker from D. James Kennedy, Ph.D., of the Coral Ridge Ministries, Fort Lauderdale, Florida, last fall during the presidential election. Bumper sticker says, "I pray, I vote, do you?"
Huh.
And I put it on my truck along with my Kerry Edwards sticker.
Okay.
And along with my Vote the Son of a Bush Out sticker.
Oh, that's
okay.
Great.
Now, the front of the envelope that the bumper sticker came in, and it was, the letter was dated September 1st, 2004. It says, "Warning, your pastor could be the next target for IRS scrutiny." And like three sentences, the beginning of the letter, it says, "Dear friend, be on your guard. Your pastor and your church may soon receive a most unwelcome visitor, the IRS. That may sound ridiculous to you, but the truth is the Internal Revenue Service, IRS, has the power to review what your pastor says, then strip away your church's tax exemption status if they disapprove of the message. I believe that D. James Kennedy and the Coral Ridge Ministries should lose their 501c3 status, that is their tax-exempt status, because although I can't prove the connection, shortly after I got my I Pray, I Vote, Do You sticker, I started getting a whole slew of Bush-Cheney political literature until Election Day.
Huh.
I've never, ever gotten Bush-Cheney information because of, like, all the animal rights groups and this and that I belong to. I've never gotten one.
No, I'm sure, Sandy, that they sell the list off to the Republican Party.
Right, and at the bottom of the I Pray I Vote Do You sticker, it says www.christianvotes.com. How dare they call themselves Christians when they're pro-war? How dare they?
I hear you. Thank you, Sandy.
Okay, thank you.
Appreciate it. Calling from Brooklyn, Michigan, though, here. Caller, you're on the air right now. I'm sorry, I don't have your name either.
Katie.
Hi, Katie. Go ahead. That was up here, and it was gone. But go ahead, Katie. You're on the air.
Well, the one question or confusion that I have with the pro-lifers is...
Wait, can I stop you? I'm sorry. Don't call them pro-lifers. That, they made up that phrase. They, for one thing,
I know that they are what they're calling themselves.
Yes, I would call them either the anti-choice people or the compulsory pregnancy movement.
Right, and my whole confusion with them is that they fight so hard against abortion, yet they still are for the death penalty.
Well, they don't make any sense. I mean, I mentioned earlier these Christians that I know that are against abortion, against the death penalty, and against war. I mean, to some extent, the Pope is like that as well. But the Catholics would support a law against abortion, whereas these people I know who are Protestants would not, because they don't believe in coercion.
And what I don't understand is what the difference is between the life of, say, a grown adult and why it's acceptable to take their life.
Well, come on, you, Katie, what would they say?
someone's
committed a crime, and the Bible says an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth.
Right.
I mean, that's what they would say, but... I mean, we wind up with this extraordinarily bloody society like this one is. It's internally bloody and crime-ridden and hate-filled, and this spreads abroad. And this is what we bring to Iraq, for instance. Death and destruction there as well.
I understand. Yep.
All right, Katie, thank you very much. Appreciate your call. I'll take one more call, and we come back. I want to talk about some of our money is going. Where a hell of a lot of our money is going. Jay, where, what call? Well, why don't we do this? Since you don't have up there who you should take next, we'll just come back and tell you about what's happening with our tax dollars.
You're listening to WRIF.com.
Anglers.
fishers, get ready to cast your line for a big money this year because the WRAF Fishing Championship Series is coming. The series consists of four tournaments this year: walleye, catfish, bass, and muskie. In each tournament, anglers compete for cash and prizes, and the team with the best average finish in the four tournament series will also win $1,500 cash, plus the title of 2005 WRAF Great Lakes Fishing Series Champions. After each event, competitors get to kick back and party at Big Al Sports Bar for the awards and more chances to win prizes from the Riff. The first tournament kicks off on April 23rd at the Lake Erie Metro Park for the WRAF Walleye Championship. The teams start their boats at 6:30 a.m. and will weigh their catch at 4 p.m. Two- to three-person teams compete for thousands in cash and prizes, but one team will finish the day holding the championship trophy. To sign up or to find out about a sponsorship, call 248-591-6841 today or go to WRIF.com to get a registration form. Become the WRAF Great Lakes Fishing Series Champion. Call 248-591-6841 today.
Every day, employers search for people skilled in today's technology. Are you ready for a change to a new career? Make a difference for yourself by calling the ITT Technical Institutes at 1-800-396-6622. Find out how an ITT Tech can help you prepare for a career in electronics, information technology, or drafting and design. Nationwide, thousands have launched technical careers after graduating from an ITT Tech. Classes meet just a few times a week to help you balance school and your job. Financial aid is available for those who qualify, and career assistance is available once you graduate. Now is your chance to make a difference for yourself, to start a new path to a career involving technology. Find out what an ITT Tech education can offer you. Call 1-800-396-6622 for an ITT Tech brochure. Classes are forming now, so call ITT Tech at 1-800-396-6622. That's 1-800-396-6622.
Hockey season may be on ice, but Miller's VIP concert series is still heating up. Miller Lite wants you to see why Detroit still rocks. Big bands, small venues, and great beer. Get a taste of what hockey season is missing. It's VIP show number 4 with Shinedown, 3 days grace, and Cedar, coming to the Masonic Temple, downtown Detroit. Keep it locked on 101 WRIF for more details on how to win your VIP tickets. From Miller Lite, there's good enough, then there's better than it has to be. Miller. Good call. This is WRIF.com.
Detroit's Rock Station 101 WRIF and WRIF.com bring you the hottest deals in the Motor City. At WRIF.com, you are only one click away from dining at some of your favorite restaurants for only half price. Dine online and eat for less. Save a ton of money with some of Metro Detroit's best restaurants, like Shields, ideal for business lunches and family dinners, with locations in Southfield, Troy, Dearborn, Commerce Township, and their newest location in Warren. Log on to www.wrif.com. You can purchase full price gift certificates to area restaurants for only half price, but quantities are limited, so you better act fast. For more details, log on to WRIF.com and be sure to check out even more special offers and savings. Like Buddy's Pizza, come into any of Buddy's 9 locations today. Enjoy one of the nation's best pizza places as recognized by the Food Network. Buddy's, Detroit's number one pizza since 1946. Log on today and save at WRIF.com.
Every Tuesday, get double shots of the best riffed rock.
The way you want it.
Rock. See, I told you there was a rational explanation.
Two for Tuesday on 101 WRIF.
Riff rocks.
Like what you hear on the Riff? Then why not get your Riff Rock to go? Download all your favorite Riff tunes right now with the Riff Music Store online at WRIF.com.
Riff rocks. Rocks.
A night of black leather, hot bands, great food, wicked bikes, and more. Plus, you can bid on a 2005 Harley-Davidson Fat Boy. The 6th annual MDA Black and Blue Ball. May 6th at the Ritz-Carlton in Dearborn. Call for tickets at 586-274-9000.
We're back with more Night Call on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's Peter Werby.
All right, thank you very much, and welcome back to our final segment at 1 a.m. Eastern Time here in Detroit, Michigan, USA. I say that for all the people that are listening around the country that aren't in our WRIF area, and overseas as well. Remember my website, peterwerby.com, P-E-T-E-R-W. Let's see. Drew is listening in Houston, and he writes in, of course, Drew could be a woman as well, right? Anyways, you're going to have Ted Nugent back from being down here for the NRA convention. He entertained with Tom DeLay. They deserve each other. Voices are equal on the Internet stream. Other people are saying we're still having a problem. That may be a little bit from my end. I'll see more. More. Tell me more, though, if you're listening on the Internet, whether or not the voices in this next segment, not what it was, but what it's going to be. One night, have your old co-host from Miami, from the old IE Radio, IE America Radio Network. I can't remember what it was that me and Jalene Jordan were on with you some Sunday night. She was very good. She'll love to hear that. In fact, she was listening earlier tonight. I saw. Okay, so allegedly it says next here does not show up here, so I'm just going to take who's ever been on here the longest. It's Daphne from Detroit. Daphne, hi. It's Peter Werby. You're on the air.
Hi.
Hi.
One thing I would like to just get straight.
Hey, could you turn your radio off?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, because we're getting this bizarre echo.
Those echoes? Okay.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, well, one thing I would like to just say, and this is just my belief. I believe religion is something that really just comes to us. And what I mean by this is that sometimes, well, not sometimes, but majority of the times in our families, we find that our people that have raised us want to impose their beliefs upon us.
Mm-hmm.
And we may not necessarily always believe this.
Right.
And my father was an atheist, I mean, complete. And it's like, as I see, as I get older and stuff, I find myself with my family. They're saying, oh, you got to become back to God, and you got to, like, just be this person and stuff. And I'm, like, totally not with it, because if I can't feel it, I don't believe it.
Sure.
And I hate to say it, Passion of the Christ is a great example of a movie that was just like, to me, it was just like a great propaganda. I mean, it was like everyone would like spend their money to go see this movie because we heard that, oh, you're going to get this Christian-like lifestyle behind it, and you're going to, oh, you're just going to feel Christ. And for me, I went to sleep.
You actually saw that? You went to sleep in the movie?
I hate to say it, but it was not just me. The person I went with, which was, you know, my mother-in-law, she went to sleep too.
I mean, all that flogging's going on, that skin's flying off, and you two are Z'd out? Wow.
I hate to say it, but it took them like about, 45 minutes to just get him up a hill? I'm like, come on.
Well, I couldn't imagine going to that movie, but I guess somebody had to do it, huh?
Well, and someone did, but the fact is that for me, it's just always been like, I think we find our religion within ourselves. We find our peace within ourselves. That's what I like to say better, that we find our peace within ourselves. And if it's just like, for instance, I'm going to give you one example, and I want to end it.
Well, sure. Let me just say that I agree with you, and that's the key, finding peace within yourself, where these people are out trying to shove their whatever they believe into your face, and you can tell these are not peaceful people.
Exactly. Exactly.
Okay, give me your last point, and I will move on, Daphne.
Okay, my last point is this. If I was into a gang fight or something, I had a group of people around me, okay, I might be urged to go out and fight for this, right?
Uh-huh.
Because I have a group of people. And to me, that's what religion is. It's just like a group of people who get together and say, this is what you should do. This is how you should be. And this is who you present yourself as. And in reality, it's like you have to find that peace within yourself. And if you're comfortable with who you are, and I'm sorry. I'm just one of those folks.
Well, that's good. We need more folks like you. Daphne, thanks so much for joining me.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Call us again, please. 313-298-WRIF. You know, there are spiritual traditions that I've been influenced by, rather. And, I mean, I'm sure within the mainstream ones, since we live in that culture, that even though I don't, not directly, they've influenced me. But, you know, over my adult life, reading some, and the only reason I hesitate, I'm not a great devotee of like Buddhism or Zen or Taoism, but the little bits that I know about them, about, you know, the sense of compassion that comes out of Buddhism and the idea of searching for the way, you know, of Taoism and all that make a lot of sense to me. More than these patriarchal religions and stories that tell you you're flawed right from the beginning. I don't buy that at all. Some open lines at 313-298-WRIF. Oh, yeah, I didn't get to this, did I? Let's see here. I will cough off air. Man, well, I'd be glad when this winter is over, eh? All right. The Senate moved towards approving $81 billion for war in Iraq and Afghanistan on Thursday in a measure that would push the total cost of combat and reconstruction past $300 billion. So we now have spent, I mean, since a lot of people say, oh, well, we didn't find any weapons of mass destruction, but we're going to bring democracy to Iraq. Well, it's costing us $300 billion. The country's in debt. So when your taxes, people complaining about taxes, a portion of your taxes is going to pay debt services to foreign banks that are loaning us money. Not even going to go anything. It's not even going to go for the war or reconstruction. It's not going to go for, you know, certainly anything here. It's just going to go to pay off this debt service. And the fact that Bush cut taxes for the wealthiest, that sure didn't help it. Now, I don't know. This is a high figure, but this comes from the Congressional Research Service that that says this is how much we'd previously, the lawmakers had previously approved $228 billion. And think about the phraseology here. Combat and reconstruction. We spent $300 billion. So where'd it go? I mean, millions and millions and millions of it have gone directly to Iraqis. I mean, they just bring over huge chests filled with cash to pay off people. We're paying all the bills there still. I mean, everybody you see when they're training troops and they've got people doing this and that, we're paying for it, you and me. Even though a lot of cities are going bankrupt, pardon me, and what have you. And, you know, I was looking at this, 21 Iraqis killed in attacks in Tikrit and Baghdad. There, if you go to my site, peterwerby.com, P-E-T-E-R-W-E-R-B-E, and if you have anything approaching a fairly fast connection, there's a film there. There's a song by Johnny Cash, and then there's these scenes that are just terrible. I mean, maybe I shouldn't tell you to take a look at them. I mean, they're so heart-wrenching. They're so frightening looking. There's no way in the world that anybody could make the argument that things have gotten better for the Iraqi people. And for the first place, who the hell was George W. Bush to decide this would be better for the Iraqi people and wind up killing tens of thousands of children and women, tens of thousands of men, now going on towards 2,000 American troops and 10, 12,000 severely injured American troops. And we foot the bill. Most of it, of course, is going to his dad's company, the Carlyle Group, and his, you know, Cheney's Halliburton and their Republican buddies like in Bechtel and places like that. But where was some of the, oh yeah, I mean, get this, talk about where our money's going. A British security company with a $292 million American contract to protect aid officials and contractors in Iraq failed to ensure weapons training for its agents and did not properly assess Iraqi guards for loyalty. Under its three-year contract awarded in 2004, Aegis was to protect American aid officials and help coordinate the dozens of other private security companies hired by the corporate contractors. So we're paying almost $300 million to these Brits. I mean, love the Brits. Some of my best friends are Brits, as a matter of fact. But this isn't even an American contract. We're paying British citizens to protect aid officials. That's who's got the contract. This is a racket. This is a scam. This is a biggest damn ripoff to which barely, I mean, people will say, well, maybe now the majority of people say it was not a good idea to invade Iraq. Well, hello. I mean, it was something like 54%. And I'm thinking 46% of the people still think it is? All these lives, all this slaughter, all this destruction, all of our money. If you don't care a damn about American soldiers that are getting killed for nothing, if you don't care about all these Iraqis, these innocent victims of American firepower and these insurgents, mostly American firepower, by the way, at least care about your damn families. $300 billion to these wealthy corporations that on one hand destroy everything and then on the other hand rebuild everything. What does it say? It says page. Oh, yeah. The State Department office charged with supervising Aegis, the project and contracting office, administers 6,500 reconstruction contracts. So, you and I are paying for 6,500 reconstruction projects in Iraq. Anything need doing here? Any people we could hire in America to rebuild our cities and to extend the quality of life in our cities? Hey, we owe these people. I mean, we've got to put out some billions of bucks to repay the Iraqis. There's no doubt about that. I mean, for illegally, for a crime against peace, which the Bush administration committed by violating international law, by lying about weapons of mass destruction, we owe these people. But still, to continue this just seems to be, just absolutely insane, doesn't it? The Army is picking TAMSCO. It's a company to build Iraq infrastructure. They're going to build a command and control infrastructure for the multinational forces in Iraq. What that means is there's going to be like 12 permanent American bases in this enormous American embassy in Baghdad. And this is, these are permanent bases. That's why we're over there. This is empire. This is to control oil. And, I'm going to just kill my voice. Let me just go to Stella in Hamtramck. Stella, it's Peter Werby. You're on the air. Hi.
Hi, how you doing?
Doing good. Thanks for joining us.
Hi. Well, on religion, I just wanted to say that I think that God is good and religion sucks. That's my personal opinion.
Okay.
Hey, didn't Ted Nugent move to a red state?
Yeah, he moved to Crawford, Texas, so he could be near his idol, George Bush.
Ooh, maybe he'll date one of the twins. I always thought he was just a pompous ass, to tell you the truth. What do you think of the Minutemen?
You mean these guys that are patrolling the border?
Right.
I thought we hired people to do that. That was just a big publicity stunt.
Well, aren't they still there?
Well, they said they were going to have 1,000 people, and they wound up with, 150.
Huh. But at least they put a spotlight on, how incompetent this administration is.
Yeah.
And, with Social Security, why don't they put a special tax on, like, corporations that outsource jobs?
There you go.
And put it in Social Security and not touch it.
Yeah, I mean, there's no problem with Social Security. It's another Bush lie and another Bush phony crisis. But it will need more money in about 30 or 40 years, and there's lots of ways to get it. Maybe that's not a bad idea. Certainly, we should not have to pay more taxes, nor should we take reduced benefits.
Right, right.
Yeah, we're agreed on that.
Agreed.
Thanks for calling from Hamtown.
Good night.
All right, good night, Stella. Let's see. Here is George in Denby. George, where's Denby?
Dundee, Monroe County.
Oh, it says Denby up here. Dundee. I know where that is. Yeah.
Yeah, I was just, I am a firm believer in charity starts at home.
Uh-huh.
And the $300 billion we're spending over there, there are so many people here who cannot make it week to week with what they have to spend out in just, medical bills alone.
Right.
They're making it so easy for people to get new homes, and they're making it easier for them to take it away.
Yeah, go ahead.
It's amazing. My mom and dad are both 81 years old. My dad was a Marine, and he, I think he gets $186 a month.
Oh, man.
He lost his hearing. He has numerous problems. And the people coming back from Iraq now are getting, four or five times that?
Yeah, it's not much.
And the people that, like the World War II veterans, they're scraping together pennies just to survive.
Well, I thought I had taken this story with me here, but I guess I don't. But Medicaid appeals, in other words, people, older people that think that they were screwed by the government, there's an appeals process, and there's 140 different places across the country. Bush is reducing the appeal center from, you ready for this, from 140 to 4. Well, if you're paying $300 billion to destroy and rebuild Iraq, I guess you don't have the money. But this assures that more elderly people are going to get screwed by Bush.
Exactly.
I mean, this is absolutely, actually, it's not startling to me that people are this terrible or this greedy or this destructive to the safety nets that should give people the absolute sense of security that they'll have a job, that if they don't have a job, that there'll be something there to help them out till they do, and that when you grow older, that there'll be something there really solid to take care of you in a decent with a decent standard of living. But obviously Bush and these nuts that are in, that now constitute this government, they don't care about that at all. But I don't know why there's not millions of people in the streets.
There will be shortly.
I think you're probably right.
That's the scary part, is our country's heading for a downfall, and nobody really wants to admit it. People are seeing it, but nobody wants to really admit it.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's scary. You look around, and, you know, all the money, like, for the contractors over there. The Army Corps of Engineers, that says it right there. If they're Army Corps of Engineers, they should be doing the rebuilding.
You know, that's an excellent idea, rather than having to give it to, like, Halliburton, you know, and...
why are we contracting that out?
Yeah, I mean...
when the Army Corps of Engineers can be over here working on Lake Erie, putting up dikes and things like that...
You know, I don't...
It's ridiculous.
Yeah, I don't think they have the capacity to do it. I mean, they're not big enough. You know what I forgot? I don't think I did that. I was talking about this company called Tamsco that's supposed to build the Iraq infrastructure. That's Bush's uncle, Bucky.
Okay.
So, I mean, they're all in on the racket. I mean, it's you create a war that makes a fortune for your father.
It's called job security for them. Everybody is looking for job security.
And they're the only ones that have it.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you very much. Appreciate your call. Thanks for calling in. Here's Craig in Lincoln Park. Craig, hi. It's Peter Werby.
Hi, Peter. First time, long time.
Well, welcome.
Thank you. I've been listening to the topic tonight. I think America is in very real danger of becoming a government like the one we just got out of Afghanistan, a right-wing religious theocracy.
Yeah.
And while we may not have actual clerics in charge of our government, it seems to me that the system is slowly leaning towards an intolerant right-wing Christian interpretation of the law, and I think that is the most dangerous thing. That's more dangerous to me than the terrorist attacks that this country has suffered. The loss of liberty and freedom is far more threatening to the continuation of America than any terrorist attack could be.
Yeah, I mean, they all, and you know what? Actually, this right wing does not talk too much about the Constitution, but the Constitution put in this stuff about no establishment of religion because of their experiences in Europe. I mean, they saw that all over Europe, that the commingling of the state and religion was deadly to human freedom.
Oh, absolutely, Peter. And one thing that these religious fundamentalists conveniently seem to ignore is, I believe Christ himself, if you believe in Christ and the Bible, well, Christ himself seemed to define a separation of church and state when he said, render unto Caesar what is Caesar's and render unto God what is God's. And I think that lesson has been lost on the religious right. And Christ himself said, give to the government what is the government's, which is separate, and give to God what is God. A religion should be a personal, spiritual quest,
mm-hmm.
not an imposition of one's beliefs or will upon a population.
Yeah, and you hope that people will join your religion, will share your views, and certainly that religious groups within society, by their good works, not trying to enforce their views on you, but by the good works they do in the community, should get the recognition that they deserve. And the ones that do that are, I mean, think about the charities that many religious organizations take part in. That's what they should be known for. All right, thanks a lot, Craig. Appreciate your call. Gene's listening in Oregon. He writes into calltalkyes@yahoo.com. I'd like to think of myself as a free thinker, though I definitely have Buddhist leanings. As this situation of the religious right has unfolded, I find the question isn't, do I believe in God, but rather, can society continue to afford God, or at least the religion surrounding him or her? I find the answer is increasingly no. All right, let's see. In Canton, here is Nick. Nick, welcome to the show.
Hey, how you doing?
Doing good.
I was just listening to how you're talking about, you know, Halliburton and everything, and it just kind of blows my mind. I served 3 years in the United States Army, and I thought it was a little ridiculous when we turn around, just like that last talker talked about, you know, the Army Corps of Engineers could have taken care of everything that we did or have done, but your own president turns around and gives it to the government, or gives it to his buddies in Halliburton, who he has an inside view on. I think that's ridiculous. I mean, these people serve. I served my country for 3 years, and now I'm back home, and I'm making, you know, ends meet compared to all these, you know, people that we sit there and live next to who are making, you know, $100,000, $200,000, $1 million a year, whatever. And it makes me laugh. I mean, and they sit there all day, respect us, but, you know, they never served their life on the line.
Well, they didn't, and most of the people sending you and your comrades off to battle made sure that they never, they scammed out of the Vietnam War, either through the National Guard or through any kind of deferments, and so how they arose as the most, seemingly most patriotic and pro-military is way, way beyond me.
Yeah.
I don't get it. At all.
That's what I ask myself. I'm like, I sit here, and I, you know, we're in this country, and we, you know, I went 3 years in on my own call, and I was proud to do it, and I had a good time doing it, and then when I turn around and I've lost 12 friends in the Iraq War so far,
wow,
it makes me sit back and realize I was third ID out of Fort Stewart, and I've lost 12 friends, and I look at it like, well, is that worth it? And no, because all those friends of mine, their families were poverty. They had nothing. That's why they went in the Army.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I question the whole thing is like, all right, why is poverty serving the country when the millionaires are just sitting back going, oh, they did, but, you know, they're not the ones in the Army or in the Marines or in the service period.
Yeah, there's an old saying, goes way back to World War One, that it's a rich man's war and a poor man's fight.
Exactly, and it just, that's something that irks me, and when I listened to earlier, you know, that's what made me call. It's just, it really, it bothers me, and what do we do about that, though? How do we change that?
Well, it, you know, we got bamboozled on this one. I mean, people tend to believe political leaders. We were grieving for what had happened in 2001, and I don't think most people could really believe that a politician could make up a reason for a war. And I don't know. I think we.
I just think I really think that a president should not benefit personally anything. Period. Whatsoever when it comes to this country. I mean, he should make his. Well, I kind of laughed when President Bush here upped the salary to $400,000 from $250,000 a year while he was in. Ironic. And then turns around. I think they should not. They should not benefit anything but what they make as being the commander-in-chief.
Mm-hmm.
And now you turn around and you have Halliburton and you have the vice president who has links to that, and it just, it seems like such a political race to turn around and make you know, a couple dozen people or a couple dozen families rich. It makes me sick. I mean, what are you going to do? I mean, how do you deal with that?
I don't know whether you want to do this or not, or whether you want to just leave this all behind you or not, but on my website, I don't know if you've ever been there, there's a link to all these GI groups and the families of GI groups that are trying to deal with some of the same things that you are, vets groups and what have you. But anyway,
what's that website?
Peter Werbe, PeterWerbe.com. You go over on the left, and it says GI Resistance.
Okay.
All right. Thank you, Nick.
All right, thank you.
Welcome back. I'm glad you got back in one piece.
Yeah, I am too, but hey, I've lost 12 friends.
Wow. All right, thank you.
All right, have a good one.
Bye. That's a sad note to end things on, and my apologies for those of you left on the line, but we got to do our interviews. Stay tuned for those.
You're listening to WRIF.com. Hockey season may be on ice, but Miller's VIP concert series is still heating up. Miller Lite wants you to see why Detroit still rocks. Big bands, small venues, and great beer. Get a taste of what hockey season is missing. It's VIP show number 4 with Shinedown, 3 days grace, and Seether, coming to the Masonic Temple, downtown Detroit. Keep it locked on 101 WRIF for more details on how to win your VIP tickets. From Miller Lite, there's good enough, then there's better than it has to be. Miller, good call. Anglers, get ready to cast your line for big money this year because the WRAF Fishing Championship Series is coming. The series consists of 4 tournaments this year: walleye, catfish, bass, and muskie. In each tournament, anglers compete for cash and prizes, and the team with the best average finish in the 4 tournament series will also win $1,500 cash, plus the title of 2005 WRAF Great Lakes Fishing Series Champions. After each event, competitors get to kick back and party at Big Al's Sports Bar for the awards and more chances to win prizes from the Riff. The first tournament kicks off on April 23rd at the Lake Erie Metro Park for the WRAF Walleye Championship. The teams start their boats at 6:30 a.m. and will weigh their catch at 4 p.m. 2 to 3 person teams compete for thousands in cash and prizes, but one team will finish the day holding the championship trophy. To sign up or to find out about a sponsorship, call 248-591-6841 today or go to WRIF.com to get a registration form. Become the WRAF Great Lakes Fishing Series Champion. Call 248-591-6841 today.
Every day, employers search for people skilled in today's technology. Are you ready for a change to a new career? Make a difference for yourself by calling the ITT Technical Institutes at 1-800-396-6622. Find out how an ITT tech can help you prepare for a career in electronics, information technology, or drafting and design. Nationwide, thousands have launched technical careers after graduating from an ITT tech. Classes meet just a few times a week to help you balance school and your job. Financial aid is available for those who qualify, and career assistance is available once you graduate. Now is your chance to make a difference for yourself, to start a new path to a career involving technology. Find out what an ITT Tech education can offer you. Call 1-800-396-6622 for an ITT Tech brochure. Classes are forming now, so call ITT Tech at 1-800-396-6622. That's 1-800-396-6622.
This is WRIF.com.
Detroit's Rock Station 101 WRIF and WRIF.com bring you the hottest deals in the Motor City. At WRIF.com, you are only one click away from dining at some of your favorite restaurants for only half price. Dine online and eat for less. Save a ton of money with some of Metro Detroit's best restaurants, like Walker's Speakeasy, the West Side's hottest destination for great food, drinks, and daily entertainment, located on Beach Daily in Dearborn Heights. Log on to www.wrif.com. You can purchase full price gift certificates to area restaurants for only half price, but quantities are limited, so you better act fast. For more details, log on to WRIF.com and be sure to check out even more special offers and savings. Like Buddy's Pizza, come into any of Buddy's 9 locations today. Enjoy one of the nation's best pizza places as recognized by the Food Network. Buddy's, Detroit's number one pizza since 1946. Log on today and save at WRIF.com.
Like what you hear on the Riff? Then why not get your Riff Rock to go? Download all your favorite Riff tunes right now with the Riff Music Store online at WRIF.com.
Riff Rock. Rocks.
Take to the ice with 101 WRIF and Labatt Blues 21 and over Summer Hockey Challenge. Games run in June at rinks across Detroit with a 3-game guarantee. All skill levels are welcome. More info available at WRIF.com or call Suburban Training Center at 248-888-1400. Get hockey with Labatt Blue and 101 WRIF.
Rip Rocks.
A night of black leather, hot bands, great food, wicked bikes, and more. Plus, you can bid on a 2005 Harley-Davidson Fatboy. The 6th annual MDA Black and Blue Ball. May 6th at the Ritz-Carlton in Dearborn. Call for tickets at 586-274-9000. From Ford Motor Company, Motor City Harley-Davidson, Pepsi Bottling Group, and 101 WRIF.
Pace cars, pole sitters, pit stops, race winners, checkered flags, record speeds, and that incredible start. Make sure that seat is yours race day. Race day reserve seats are available starting at $40 and general admission only $20. To get your tickets, call 800-822-INDY. That's 800-822-INDY. Or buy them online at IndianapolisMotorSpeedway.com. That's IndianapolisMotorSpeedway.com. Call or go online now, because the only thing that goes faster than an Indy 500 car is an Indy 500 ticket. May 29th, the Indy 500. Accelerate your senses.
Hello.
How are you?
Hey, it's Joe and Mike, and Monday Morning Mr. Stress has a huge complaint. Hey, it's Joe and Mike, and Monday Morning Mr. Stress will stop by. Man, oh, man, is he all bent out of shape. Huh? Hey, it's Joe and Mike, and Monday Morning Mr. Stress will stop by with some diatribe over God knows what. And our old friend Bob Boner has a used car he wants to sell. He'll be along as well. And more with us, Joe and Mike, on 101 WRF Detroit.
Now, Night Call is back on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's your host, Peter Werby.
Thank you very much for joining me. A pleasure, as usual, to be with you. There's a lot of very important issues that face not only our country but the entire planet that are generally off the agenda. Nobody in a coma dying, nobody murdering their wife or some movie star accused of sexual harassment, all those very, very, very important things that affect our lives so dramatically, right? You can tell I'm being cynical, because there are issues that are, in many times, the future of the planet are at stake, including a lot of environmental and issues, for instance, with Earth Day upon us. But one issue that I'm pleased to have been able to bring you several times and use as a resource, Bruce K. Gagnon, he's the coordinator of Global Network Against Weapons and Nuclear Power in Space. They're located in Brunswick, Maine, and it's a pleasure to welcome Bruce back. Thanks for joining us again on the Peter Werby Show.
Thank you, Peter.
Well, I see you guys are having a conference this coming Sunday, or Saturday, rather, April 30th. It's going to be in New York City. But I think the elements of the conference are very important. And this is not the first one. What, this is your 13th annual?
That's right. The Global Network was created in 1992. And each year we hold a conference in a different part of the world. So this year we're meeting in New York City at the very time of the beginning of the United Nations annual meetings around the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty, the NPT. That's the treaty that all the nuclear powers signed, saying that we're going to get rid of our nuclear weapons. And unfortunately, none of the nuclear powers, including the United States, is honoring that treaty. In fact, right now, the Bush administration is working on new generations of nuclear weapons.
Now, tell us about the name of it, what it means, Full Spectrum Resistance, an international space organizing conference. Trekkies, this isn't what it's about, all right? We're about some real earthbound problems, and that has to do with the people that are attempting to use space as an arena for weaponry. But Full Spectrum Resistance, what's that part of it mean?
Well, the Pentagon has a new doctrine called Full Spectrum Dominance that says that the United States will dominate military conflict at every level, on the ground with our conventional army, in the sea with our navy, the air with our air force, and that we will put weapons in space in order to deny other countries access to space. In fact, in 1997, in a planning document called Vision for 2020, and since then, in other documents, the military, the Space Command, the Pentagon, has come out saying that we, the United States, have the right to control and dominate space and deny other countries access to space, and that we will create full spectrum dominance in order to control all these levels of military conflict, which means basically that they're going to move the arms race into the heavens.
Well, I mean, couldn't the argument be made if it's up there and it's sort of neutral territory, we could stand the risk of somebody else grabbing it, one of our potential enemies down the line, and if somebody has to control space with weaponry, why not the U.S. of A.?
Well, and that is their position. The problem is, number one, it violates international treaties. The 1967 Outer Space Treaty, negotiated at the United Nations. In fact, the United States was one of the countries that initiated that treaty because we feared just that very thing, that at that time the Soviet Union might want to put things into space, and we didn't want that to happen. Because think about it for a moment, your cable TV, your cell phone, all kinds of things, the bank, the teller machine at the bank, where you go and get cash out, all those things are coordinated by satellites, right? So if you start having war in space, your satellites, your commercial satellites, they also become a target. They also get destroyed when space debris, orbiting junk. When you blow things up in space, you create more space junk. Today, on the big radar screens inside Cheyenne Mountain in Colorado at NORAD, they're tracking 110,000 pieces of space junk larger than a half of an inch, orbiting the Earth at 18,000 miles an hour.
Well, where's all this come from?
It comes from the years of use of space by the United States and the former Soviet Union. Anytime there's been an explosion, an accident, all these kind of things up in space, it leaves all this junk up there. When astronauts have gone up and they've gone out and worked on satellites from the shuttle and everything, and they've dropped a wrench or something like that into space, it's now orbiting as space junk. And in fact, you remember the shuttle Challenger before its tragic accident years ago, it had its windshield cracked by a tiny, tiny speck of paint.
Really?
That hit it at 18,000 miles an hour.
Oh, so, well, that'll do it.
So if you start allowing any country to put weapons in space and having war in space, you're then going to create so much more space debris that many scientists are saying you will essentially create a piranha-filled river around the planet, making it virtually impossible for us to get off the planet.
Well, I was going to say, we're going to quarantine ourselves.
That's right.
Well, some people, particularly maybe people that live in outer space that we don't know about, probably might think that's a good idea. All right, we're talking with Bruce Gagnon, and he's the coordinator of the Global Network Against Weapons and Nuclear Power in Space. They're holding their 13th annual Space Organizing Conference in New York City. And, I thought I had here. It's spaceforpeace.org, and the four is the numeral, so it's space4peace.org. There's information already on my website at peterwerby.com. The second part of the conference title to be held on Saturday, April 30th in New York City, is Full Spectrum Resistance at International Space Organizing Committee. Again, this might be attracting the Trekkies, but we should tell them this is where we're going to be doing all this here on the planet Earth. So who and how are people organizing?
Well, what's happened is, in order for the United States to put together this space warfare, as we call it, Star Wars system, they've had to, all over the world, put radar facilities, downlink stations they're called, that communicate with the satellites. Because in order to tie this whole thing together, they've had to establish these Space Command bases all over the world. And so suddenly in Australia and in England and in Germany and in Japan and all over the planet, Greenland, people are now having these bases plunked down inside of their countries that make warfare in space possible. And so these activists, people in those countries, say we don't want our country to be used as a base to promote war and fight war in space. And so years ago, these were the people that came together to create our organization, the Global Network Against Weapons and Nuclear Power in Space. And
so this is truly an international organization when you talk about International Space Organizing Conference. Give us an example, Bruce Gagnon, if you will, about, say, one of the countries you mentioned and how people are approaching resistance to the implantation of these facilities, which I assume the host country must be allowing the U.S. to put there.
That's right. Well, I think England's a very good example. Up in Yorkshire, northern England, there are two of these U.S. bases. One of them is called Menwith Hill. They have these huge, big, round, they're called radoms. They look like gigantic golf balls, and these are radar-receiving devices that are used. 60 Minutes reported this a few years ago. They're used to intercept all phone, fax, and email communication from throughout Europe to spy on the people of Europe, essentially. They're used for industrial espionage by U.S. corporations, and they're now being upgraded for participation in Star Wars. Another place nearby, up in the moors, in the middle of the national park, where the fields and fields of heather grow, is this gigantic pyramid-shaped device called a Pave Pause Radar. There's another one of them on Cape Cod in Massachusetts that for years has been emitting radio waves that people on Cape Cod believe has been causing extensive cancers because they have a tremendously high cancer rate in the area around the radar facility. But anyway, up there in northern England, in the middle of their national park in the moors, they have this facility. So the Campaign for Nuclear Disarmament, the largest peace group in all of Europe, it's the British peace group, they have made this their top priority to shut these bases down and get them out of the country. They are one of the leading groups in our international organization.
Okay. I'm sorry. I thought you were going to continue a little more. And in fact, I will ask the question then to elicit what I thought was coming, and that is, what are they doing? I mean, are they? Is it direct action? Is it through politics or all of it?
Yeah, they're doing all of it. They're constantly protesting at these two facilities. They're doing all kinds of work within their parliament to try to stop Tony Blair from basically allowing the United States to do whatever we want to do with these facilities. Tony Blair has cut a deal privately, secretly, with George Bush, basically letting him expand these operations and everything else, even though the people in England do not support that. So the group there does all kinds of political work, direct action work, mm-hmm. and everything else.
Well, let me go back to my first question, which you answered in one manner. And I said, in your answer, you said the Pentagon's view was that we can't allow the possibility of some other nation dominating space, which would then give them the edge over the U.S. And you said, among other things, that it was against international law. Well, that, as you know, and I think most people listening know, doesn't play real well in Washington now. The idea that, hey, the United States has got to do what it's got to do to protect itself, it's from, you know, national security, its economic interest. And if it's against international law, well, maybe we just have to, you know, to do what's necessary for us.
Well, you know, one of the first things that George W. Bush did when he was selected as president of the United States was he walked away from the anti-ballistic missile treaty that we had with Russia. It was signed in 1971 by Richard Nixon. It basically outlawed the testing and deployment of missile defense systems. It was a treaty that would stop the growth of the arms race and moving it into space. So clearly, you're right, that is the position of the Bush administration. They don't care about international law. And it's our position that the American people need to care about international law, because an arms race in space will make our life here on Earth more unstable. When you move an arms race into space, ultimately you're going to be moving, for example, nuclear reactors, because the Pentagon is saying that they intend to use nuclear reactors orbiting the Earth to power weapons in space, like the space-based laser, what they have nicknamed the Death Star. Now, I want you to imagine, you remember 2 years ago when the shuttle Columbia fell back to Earth and burned up and spread its debris over Texas and Louisiana. Imagine that being a nuclear reactor tumbling back to Earth, burning up on reentry, and spreading deadly plutonium globally in the wind, carried by the winds, to be inhaled by the people. This is global suicide. And so we cannot allow the arms race to move into space. But beyond that, just the sheer cost of it, the Pentagon says this will be the largest industrial project in the history of the planet Earth, Star Wars, costing so much money that they're going to have to cut Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, education, on down the line. There won't be any money left for anything else. And we already know we're in a huge fiscal crisis here in America.
Yeah, we have a deficit already. What kind of figures are we talking about for Star Wars, which essentially is a missile shield system that would stop incoming ballistic missiles aimed at the United States?
Well, that's the sales pitch. You know, the sales pitch is that it's defensive, it's going to protect us, as you just said, from rockets coming in to attack the United States. But the truth of the matter is, the shield would, first of all, not work, because all you'd have to do would be to fly under it. 9/11, you know, having planes hit buildings, Star Wars would never have protected against that in a moment. You can use cruise missiles flying under any Star Wars system, or you just overwhelm it. China and Russia have said, if you go forward, if you, the United States, go forward with Star Wars, we're just going to build more nuclear weapons, and we'll just overwhelm it. You won't be able to intercept them all. And so there's always a way to get over it, around it, underneath it, whatever. And so ultimately, this thing is not about, what I've learned in my 20 years of working on space issues, is that it was never intended to be about defense. That's just the sales pitch. It's a Trojan horse. What it's really about is offense, controlling, dominating space, denying other countries access to space. Those are all offensive words and offensive military doctrines. Preemption, that's all offense, not defense. Mm-hmm. And that's what this thing is really going to be about.
I'm sure you've heard, being in this for so long, the analogy that if each opponent has a sword, they're kind of equally matched. If one of the opponents has a sword and a shield, they have the offensive
first strike capability.
Yeah, they have a first strike capability. Yeah. Let's continue on a little more talking about this conference that's going to occur in New York City Saturday, April 30th. It's called the Full Spectrum Resistance International Space Organizing Conference. My guest, Bruce Gagnon, who's the coordinator of the Global Network Against Weapons and Nuclear Power in Space. Their website, space4peace.org, with numeral 4 in the middle there. Tell us about the keynote speaker, Dr. Michio Kaku, who's a professor of theoretical physics at City University of New York. And he was one of your founding members, right?
That's right, he is. And he's also one of the leading theoretical physicists in the world today, working on a thing called the Unified String theory, or they call it the theory of everything. He's really picking up where Einstein left off, and so he's really a very much a renowned leader in this whole new theoretical physics direction. But he's always been interested in this whole space issue, and very much interested in preventing the arms race from moving into space. And so he will be one of the keynote speakers. Another keynote speaker will be a woman by the name of Jenny Jones, who's a former deputy mayor of London, England. There's a tremendous effort to get mayors from all over the world to come to New York for the first week of May for the start of the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty talks at the United Nations, because the mayors around the world are very upset by the fact that the nuclear powers are not moving to disarm themselves. You know, we in the United States talk about weapons of mass destruction are evil, and anyone that has it are part of the axis of evil, but we have them. We have more than anyone else in the world, and but that seems to be okay.
Well, we have more, but, for instance, Russia has a lot as well, and because of this erstwhile peace going on between us and them, and without each side threatening the other, that's sort of the fear of nuclear war or nuclear exchange seems to be off everyone's agenda. But this all just sort of assumes that things go along as they are. I mean, there's political forces in Russia that are extraordinarily hostile to the United States, and it's not exactly a stable country. What are the potentials there? I mean, are we here in Detroit, for instance, are we safe? I mean, how are we still being targeted? What's the deal with this the Russian weapons now?
Well, actually, the Russians have cut back some on their nuclear weapons because, frankly, they just couldn't afford to keep them all online, and so as a cost-cutting measure, they've really reduced a lot of them. But they have their missiles on what's called launch-on-warning status. If they get the slightest warning that the United States has launched, they then launch automatically. It's really basically in the hands of the computers. But what we know is the real danger involved with this is the fact that Russian satellites, because of Russian's economic collapse in the last 20 years, Russian satellites have not been replaced or updated, and so they're getting so old that they really can't detect American missile launches until the very last couple minutes before they were to reach Russia, and for that reason they put their missiles on launch-on-warning status. And so this really has created kind of a hair-trigger situation, that the slightest human failure or computer error or something like that could really launch an accidental nuclear war. In fact, things are more dangerous today than they were at the height of the Cold War, when everyone was a lot more careful, a lot more watchful, and the technologies were newer and working properly. And so it's really important right now that we continue to talk about getting rid of nuclear weapons, especially at the time when the United States wants to bring the next level of the arms race, Star Wars, forward. And countries like Russia and China are saying, if you do that, you're going to force us to build more nuclear weapons. The truth is, Russia and China has 20 nuclear missiles capable of hitting the United States today. We have over 7,000 nuclear weapons of our own. Russia has a couple thousand. France has some. Israel has 100 or more. And there, India, Pakistan now have nuclear weapons. And so the numbers are growing around the world. So the fact is, someone has to make the first move. And it's always been said that the bigger powers, the United States, the UK, France, Russia, really need to make the first move. But at this time, again, the United States is moving in the other direction. We're building more nuclear weapons, new generations of usable nuclear weapons under the Bush administration. So we're heading in the wrong direction now.
Now, Bruce Gagnon, your April 30th conference on resistance to nukes in space is going to coincide, as you said, with the United Nations 2005 Nuclear Nonproliferation Treaty Review Conference. Just to review that for us quickly, if you could, because, do that. If you, where do things stand?
Well, this is the time, these review conferences at the UN is when all the nuclear powers come together and say, yeah, we're on course. You know, we said we were going to get rid of our nuclear weapons and we're on course and we're doing it. Well, in fact, they're lying. They're not doing it. They're not moving forward, getting rid of nuclear weapons. As I just said, we're heading the other direction. We're building new generations of them. And so peace movement people come from all over the world. There are several thousand activists coming from Japan, just Japan itself. Hundreds and hundreds are coming from Germany, and hundreds are coming from France, the other nuclear powers. And they're coming to lobby their countries to say, you know, the French citizens, we call upon our French government to get out of this nuclear thing. So it's not just everybody coming to complain about the United States, but thousands of American activists will be there as well, talking about and criticizing our own government. On May 1st, the day after our conference, there's going to be an international rally for disarmament in Central Park in New York City.
I know there was a big one, and I was at it. What was it, 1981? 1982 that I was there, and it seems like there was an extraordinary number of people. Could it
almost
have
a million.
That's what I thought. I didn't want to exaggerate, but that was my...
I should tell you a story about
sure,
that.
Sure, please.
I didn't go to that demonstration that day, but I watched it on C-SPAN. I watched the speakers, and afterwards they switched C-SPAN switched to a right-wing conference. And the speaker at that conference that day was Lieutenant General Daniel Graham. He was Ronald Reagan's head of SDI, Star Wars.
Mm-hmm.
And someone asked him during the question and answer period, General Graham, aren't you worried about that demonstration in New York today? They say there's almost a million people there. And he said, no, I think it's fantastic. They're out there in the streets protesting against intercontinental ballistic missiles. We're moving into space, and they don't have a clue. Let them keep doing what they're doing. And so it was in that moment that I started working on space, because I realized that this is where they were heading. This is the direction that the Pentagon was moving, and I felt that we need to head them off at the pass, and that's when I began working on Star Wars.
Well, we're going to have to head them off at the pass, aren't we? I mean, this is not sort of a matter of opinion. I mean, there's some very concrete things that are being done, being planned by the U.S. military and other nuclear powers that could at some point become irreversible.
Yeah, you know, and I have a 24-year-old son, and much of what I do is really motivated by his future, and I think about the future generations in all the work that I do. How can you claim you're going to have education and health care and clean drinking water and clean air and everything else when you're literally pouring the national treasury into the Pentagon plans to keep building nuclear weapons, to create a new arms race in space, to put nuclear reactors in space, to power weapons in space? It is just ludicrous, and it's insane. And we as parents who care for our children and are and hope for our children's future. We always want our children to have a better future than we had. We can't look at these plans and feel hopeful about them. So we must move now to try to reverse these things and stop these things. We have to.
Well, I want to thank you so much for being with us. My guest has been Bruce Gagnon. He's coordinator for the Global Network Against Weapons and Nuclear Power in Space. If you can get there, get there. It's Saturday, April 30th. You can go to their website, space4peace.org. It's numeral 4, space4peace.org. I'll have a link at my site, peterwerby.com. It's something that everyone can attend. I know many of you are listening on the Internet, so you might be a little closer than we are in Detroit. And I assume that you will have a report of all this on your site after this is over.
Yes, we will. And thank you very much, Peter.
Well, thank you.
Bye-bye.
WRIM.com. If you think it's too late in life to earn the college degree you want, listen to this. Now you can go to a college designed for busy working adults. It's University of Phoenix, the nation's largest private accredited university. In most cases, you can earn a bachelor's or master's degree in just 2 to 3 years. To find out how, call 1-800-664-1391. At the University of Phoenix Detroit campus, the small classroom settings are designed for working adults with busy lives. With their efficient learning model, you'll cover more material in less time, going to convenient classes in the evening or on the weekend. At University of Phoenix, you can do this. For a complimentary brochure on degree programs in business, technology, nursing, education, and more, call University of Phoenix now, 1-800-664-1391. Programs vary by campus. Classes are forming, so call now, 1-800-664-1391. That's 1-800-664-1391.
Anglers, get ready to cast your line for a big money this year because the WRAF Fishing Championship Series is coming. The series consists of 4 tournaments this year: walleye, catfish, bass, and muskie. In each tournament, anglers compete for cash and prizes, and the team with the best average finish in the 4 tournament series will also win $1,500 cash, plus the title of 2005 WRAF Great Lakes Fishing Series Champions. After each event, competitors get to kick back and party at Big Al's Sports Bar for the awards and more chances to win prizes from the Riff. The first tournament kicks off on April 23rd at the Lake Erie Metro Park for the WRAF Walleye Championship. The teams start their boats at 6:30 a.m. and will weigh their catch at 4 p.m. 2 to 3 person teams compete for thousands in cash and prizes, but one team will finish the day holding the championship trophy. To sign up or to find out about a sponsorship, call 248-591-6841 today or go to WRIF.com to get a registration form. Become the WRAF Great Lakes Fishing Series Champion. Call 248-591-6841 today.
You're listening to WRIF.com.
Take to the ice with 101 WRAF and Labatt Blues 21 and over Summer Hockey Challenge. Games run in June at rinks across Detroit with a 3-game guarantee. All skill levels are welcome. More info available at WRAF.com or call Suburban Training Center at 248-888-1400. Get hockey with Labatt Blue and 101 WRIF.
Rip Rocks.
A night of black leather, hot bands, great food, wicked bikes, and more. Plus, you can bid on a 2005 Harley-Davidson Fat Boy. The 6th annual MDA Black and Blue Ball. May 6th at the Ritz-Carlton in Dearborn. Call for tickets at 586-274-9000. From Ford Motor Company, Motor City Harley-Davidson, Pepsi Bottling Group, and 101 WRIF.
Detroit's rock station, 101 WRIF and WRIF.com bring you the hottest deals in the Motor City. At WRIF.com, you are only one click away from dining at some of your favorite restaurants for only half price. Dine online and eat for less. Save a ton of money with some of Metro Detroit's best restaurants. Like the Shark Club on Ford Road, just east of Canton Center Road in Canton. Log on to www.wrif.com. You can purchase full-price gift certificates to area restaurants for only half price. But quantities are limited, so you better act fast. For more details, log on to WRIF.com and be sure to check out even more special offers and savings. Like Buddy's Pizza, come into any of Buddy's 9 locations today. Enjoy one of the nation's best pizza places as recognized by the Food Network. Buddy's, Detroit's number one pizza since 1946. Log on today and save at WRIF.com.
Every Tuesday, get double shots of the best riff rock.
The way you want it.
Rock. See, I told you there was a rational explanation.
Two for Tuesday on 101 WRIF.
Riff rocks.
Like what you hear on the riff? Then why not get your riff rock to go? Download all your favorite riff tunes right now with the Riff Music Store online at WRIF.com.
Riff rock. Rocks.
The Specs Howard School of Broadcast Arts in Southfield, Michigan. 248-358-9000. This is where you start. It's where I started.
We're back with more Night Call on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's Peter Werby.
Thank you very much for joining me. Pleasure to be with you. Something called the estate tax repeal just passed. The proponents call it the death tax. And here's what House Speaker Dennis Hastert, Republican of Illinois, said. This tax isn't necessary. It's just evil because it takes away the American dream from too many American families. Our guest, Chuck Collins, who is a senior fellow at United for a Fair Economy, says estate tax opponents are fighting to preserve every last dime of Paris Hilton's inheritance. Chuck Collins, welcome back to the Peter Werby Show.
Hey, Peter. Great to be with you.
Now, you can pose quotes any way you want, and as also a print journalist, I know you can kind of make things appear. Yours, you know, the way I read it, yours sounds flippant, and that was my fault. My fault, the way I read it. Hastert, Representative Hastert, sounds like this deep concern for families that are going to be taxed up to 45% when someone dies.
Yeah, I mean, this is the terrain of the debate. Some people are basically saying, look, you know, this is a tax on success. It's a tax on people who've worked hard all their lives and they want to pass on their kids. I mean, I would sort of argue it's a tax on heirs. It's an inheritance tax. They call it a death tax. I would call it an inheritance tax. It's a tax on the passage of substantial wealth, not a small amount of wealth, but this year upwards of $1.5 million onto people who've done nothing to actually earn that wealth.
How do you mean? They're the heirs.
The Paris Hiltons.
Yeah.
You know, the sons and daughters, the heirs and the heiresses of America's great fortunes. So, not to denigrate the elders who perhaps, you know, did the work to accumulate this wealth, but even in their case, I would argue that that wealth would not exist if they did not try to grow that wealth in the fertile ground of the United States, mm-hmm. which has been built with taxpayer money and community investments and public and private contributions that have made a fertile ground for wealth creation. And it seems like at the end of life, when you're passing money on to the heirs who've done nothing to create it, is it appropriate time to levy a tax?
Well, an argument could be made that many of us work so that our children will have something substantial to continue life with, for instance.
Sure, and then the question is, well, what's substantial? Let's say, Peter, you have $10 million.
Okay.
And you have three children. The tax, the estate tax this year, starts at $1.5 million. So already you've passed on $500,000 to each of your children before you even start to pay the tax. And then you're paying at maybe a 40% rate. And you've also perhaps gifted money to them over the years. You know, you can give up to $11,000 per kid from each parent over a period. So chances are, if you have $10 million, each of your kids is getting a couple million dollars each. That's a pretty good head start in today's world, and that's a bigger head start than 99.9% of the population is going to get.
Mm-hmm. I often get, particularly when I do phone-in talk shows, I'll get these men, usually from the middle class, even from the working class, who are just livid, saying, you want to take their money. It's their money. They've earned it. And the idea of working hard all your life, and middle class and working class people really do work hard, and then suddenly Big Brother comes, big government comes, and takes money away from you. I mean, on one hand, nothing. People have always revolted against taxes. So, but nothing, particularly at this point of personal tragedy, of passing of someone, that there's just such anger on the part of, who are we talking about? How many people, actually?
Well, last year was about 18,000. So, again, we're talking...
Wait. 18,000?
18,000 estates.
Huh.
Yeah. Let's put it in perspective. I mean, let's first of all start by, let's affirm that impulse, that desire to pass something on to your kids. I think that's basically human. People want to work to better their lives for their children, and a lot of working people make enormous sacrifices to do that we should honor. What we're talking about here is not somebody who's worked to save $100,000 so their kids can go to college. Not somebody who's built up the family pharmacy that their son or daughter is going to run. We're talking about people with substantial wealth, the kind of wealth that it's very hard to save, that in most cases comes from previous generations of inherited wealth or through hitting the lottery or essentially, you know, building a widget or, you know, the high-tech business or something where you're... So I would argue people who've accumulated $10, $50 million, $100 million are in a different category than Joan or Jose or other people who are working hard to pass something on to their kids so their kids can have a level play, or, you know, a little bit of a head start. That's mm-hmm. really a different situation.
And Joan and Jose aren't at risk anyways. I mean, if
they're not going to pay the estate tax.
And they talk
the tax falls on, it's less than 1.5% of the population, and that number is shrinking over the next couple of years.
I mean, statutorily.
That's right. So under the current law, the amount of wealth exempted by the tax is going to rise to $3.5 million by 2009, or $7 million for a couple.
Well, let's talk a little about the impact of all of this. My guest is Chuck Collins on the Peter Werbe Show. He's a senior fellow at United for a Fair Economy, and we'll give you their information about how you can reach the group online. There's usually a connection at my website as well. What is this, just in terms of raw dollars, what is this going to a repeal, which, by the way, is not finalized. It still has to go to the Senate. We're talking about repealing taxes at a point where we're already in debt, we're fighting this endless war, which is sort of unusual. There's never been a country in the history of the world that's ever repealed or reduced taxes in a time of war. But be that what it may, what's this going to cost us just in absolute dollars?
Well, you know, last year the estate tax raised $35 billion, which you could say is not that much in the scope of the whole budget. But over it grows because there's this enormous intergenerational transfer of wealth that's happening. All the wealth that was born or built over the 50s and 60s and 70s is about to pass generation. So the projection is over the next, if we abolish the estate tax, over the next 10 years, it'll cost about $290 billion, and over the next 20 years, about $1 trillion in revenue lost. And this is money that's raised from people who are most able to pay. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Deceased multimillionaires and billionaires. If you eliminate that tax, you essentially shift it onto other people. Wage earners, low and middle income people are going to pick up the slack.
No, I was going to say, somebody's got to pay this, folks, to the listening audience, and sort of have our choice here. We can either have the multimillionaires and the billionaires pay it, or we, the middle class, the working class listening, the poor, can pay it. And it doesn't seem like a hard choice. On my part, but I'm wondering about the anger. You do, Chuck Collins, a lot of speaking around.
Sure.
Do you find that anger sometimes about you want to take? I mean, they're almost livid. You want to take people's money away from them.
You know, it's understandable because the tax burden has been shifted off of the super wealthy onto low and middle income working people. People with incomes under $100,000 are paying a higher percentage of their income in taxes, and people who are with $1 million incomes and up are paying less. And that's been the last 25 years, there's been this progressive shift. So if people are feeling burdened, it's not entirely an illusion. And but what happens is the sort of radical anti-tax zealots basically try to tap into people's understandable frustration or anger about taxation to justify abolishing taxes on the super wealthy, which turns around and shifts the tax burden onto everyone else. So, you know, people go out and say, oh, don't you want to get rid of the death tax? You know, everybody dies, they have to pay the tax. Well, that's not true. And this is, you know, the death of the family farm and the small business. Well, that's not true. But there's a way that they try to frame it in a very populist way. Say, don't you resent this? Yeah, I resent it. But then they turn around and abolish a tax that's only paid by multimillionaires and billionaires, and lo and behold, guess who's ends up paying the bills?
There was another quote here from House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi, Democrat of California. She called the repeal of the estate tax reverse Robin Hood and said, we're taking money from the middle class and giving it to the super rich, and not only the super rich, but the super, super, super rich. Now, if you make $1.5 million, are you paying 45% of that in tax or?
No, here's an interesting number. This is the number to focus on. What's the effective rate of the estate tax? Meaning, you know, you got $20 million. What of your wealth are you going to effectively end up paying in taxes? Last year, the IRS said that the average effective rate was 18%. So $1 out of $5. So, you know how you have a rate, but it actually is not the same as the effective rate, which is the rate, you know, the actual rate, the percentage that you pay.
And is it progressive? I mean, the more money, if you have one, if you have $1.5 million estate, and a estate worth $1.5 million, where this estate tax now kicks in, do you pay one tax? And if you have $1 billion, do you pay a higher tax?
You know, it used to be that there was a graduated rate. One of the things that's happened under the 2001 reform is that it's all coming, it's all one rate. And I would argue, we basically support the idea of what I would call a progressive reform of the estate tax. Let's raise the wealth exemptions up, you know, $2 million for an individual, $4 million for a couple. Let's make it easier to pass on a closely held business. And let's make the rates progressive. So you can say, you know, the rate at the bottom end is like the same as the income tax, you know, 35% or so. But on fortunes over $20 million, why not kick it up to 65%? I mean, during World War II, Franklin Delano Roosevelt initiated and got passed an estate tax of 70% rate on fortunes over $50 million, $50 million during World War II.
Mm-hmm.
It was part of the original intent of the estate tax, or what I call the inheritance tax, to thwart the buildup of concentrations of wealth and power that undermine democracy.
Well, no, that's the second part of it. We talked earlier about the cost of it, and this is going to cost us as much as $290 billion in an already deficit economy. What is the impact of concentrated wealth and the impact that it has on democracy?
Well, it has a corrosive and corrupt effect, and this is where you go back and look at, you know, the speeches of President Teddy Roosevelt and even industrialist Andrew Carnegie and people who were concerned when 100 years ago we were kind of in the first Gilded Age, when there were these great robber baron fortunes, these great concentrations of wealth and power, and that those were corrupting and subverting our democratic institutions. And if I would say you eliminate the estate tax, and incidentally, who's behind this, right? The Mars Candy family, the Gallo Wine family, the Walton family, the wealthiest family in America. It's just been found out a couple weeks ago. There's a great expose in USA Today showing how the Waltons have been secretly funneling money to the lobbying powerhouse of Patton Boggs to lobby to get rid of the estate tax. Why do the Waltons want to get rid of the estate tax? Because they want to maintain, for the several generations, a controlling interest in Walmart. Well, what does it mean? It means that your grandchildren and my grandchildren are going to be working overtime to pay the grandchildren of the Waltons for their dividends.
They're going to be working at Walmart.
They're going to be working at Walmart.
The way the things are going. But, you know, I've used this analogy, or not actually not analogy, an example so many times. Like, for instance, as you know, Chuck Collins, Walmart closed a Quebec store because people had unionized. And they said they couldn't make any profits off of that, which essentially it was just extortion. They were telling Walmart workers all over the world, you unionize, we're closing the store. Now, the combined fortune of the three kids and Sam Walton's widow is, I forgot why, $76 billion or something like that.
That's right.
So that family is richer, the four of them, richer than Bill Gates, the richest man in the world. If they were to have a change of heart and to pay each of their, and they're also the fourth, fifth, sixth, and seventh richest people in America. If they were to change, they had a change of heart and they were going to say, we union membership is a condition of employment here. We're going to pay everybody $35 an hour, create retirement funds, have turned their stores into garden spots and everything like that. They would still be the fourth, fifth, sixth, and seventh richest people in the world. It's almost just, well, we've talked about this before about the reasons, but I'm really going for psychology. I think it's just pathological greed. I mean, they don't need this. They could give away 95% of their income, or their wealth rather, and still be extraordinarily rich to the point where they couldn't spend everything they have.
Well, and this is precisely the reason why we, the people, the citizens of this country, should be very concerned when one family has so much power. I mean, they have the power. They could to say, well, let's pay a living wage. You know, they mm-hmm. could have that power, as well as they have now the philanthropic power. In a couple of years, you know, Alice Walton, the mother, former wife of Sam Walton, will die. She's going to pass on her money to the Walton Foundation. The other kids are going to do the same. Well, what does the Walton Foundation fund? They fund education privatization, school vouchers. Their foundation is going to surpass the Gates Foundation and become the biggest foundation in the country. And they're going to have a conservative education. They're going to fund a conservative education agenda.
They're not Democrats? I'm surprised.
No, that is a mighty heavy thumb on the scale, Democratic scale.
Sure it is.
No one family should have so much power. That's why people instituted the inheritance tax, what we call the estate tax legally, you know, four generations ago. That was what was on their mind.
Speaking about the Democratic Party, who I frequently refer to as another party as opposed to the opposition party, but they did, with this estate tax repeal bill in the House of Representatives, at different points put up some resistance, but it looks at the end from the House vote, 272 to 162, that some Democrats joined the Republicans. Why would Democrats do this?
Well, you know, 42 Democrats joined up with the United Republican Party to pass that bill in the House. I should say they've done that every year for the last 4 years by the same, pretty much the same vote margin. And they do it because they're trying to put pressure on the Senate, where this bill is sort of sitting in gridlock. You know, why do these Democrats do it? Partly because they're in districts where the only people they hear from are small business owners, used car dealers, newspaper editors, and others who are part of this kind of coalition to get rid of the estate tax. So they hear from their grass tops, you know, their wealthier constituents who they listen to in a more attentively than any ordinary citizen. So they're, you know, but it's partly also there's no alternative, and we're trying to really get an alternative estate tax reform instead of repeal on the agenda. And I think we'll see, partly because of the budget, the dire multi-decade budget situation, a lot of people are saying, yeah, well, maybe we should mm-hmm. retain the estate tax on big fortunes.
Actually, every wealthy person in the country doesn't agree with this. In fact, Chuck Collins, you work with a number of them in one of the groups of United for a Fair Economy. It's called Responsible Wealth. And we did. I even interviewed who I think was the chair at that time, or at least a spokesperson, was Bill Gates Sr.
That's right, yeah, Bill Gates Sr. I mean, we have 2,200 multimillionaires and millionaires and billionaires who will pay an estate tax, who've signed a public petition urging Congress to reform and retain the estate tax. People can go to responsiblewealth.org. They can see that petition. They can sign it if they share that concern, and they can see the list of some of the heavy hitters that are all standing up and saying, you know what? It's a fundamentally American value to tax inheritances.
Can you give us a few of the people whose names we might recognize other than Bill Gates Sr.?
Sure. Ted Turner and Warren Buffett and Paul Newman. Agnes Gunn, the art patron from down the road there in Cleveland. A number of Hollywood people like Martin Sheen and Danny Glover and others. You know, there's old wealth in there, Rockefeller. There's new wealth, the Soroses. There's, you know, Republicans like the former chairman of American Airlines, Bob Crandall. You know, it's a wide range of people who would just think it's a terrible idea to completely get rid of the estate tax.
Can I sign?
You can. You don't have to be a multimillionaire.
Okay.
No, I'm not presuming you're not, but
you'd
still work in your
correct.
Day job.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you can sign. And we need, and that's one of the ways actually you can plug into our action network. And people in Michigan are very important in helping keep you know, get the word out. So if you sign the petition, that kind of loops you in, and we'll keep you posted on, you know, when there's going to be a Senate vote and how you can help out to make sure we don't get rid of the most progressive tax on wealth our country has.
Well, now, kind of turning the old adage on its head, if these people are so rich, how come they're not smart? I mean, this is the Bushes and what have you and the Republicans in the House. Or are they hoping that this will just get one of those bills where the House can put it, pass it, and then they'll look good, and then the Senate goes, no way. Is this going to make it through the Senate?
Well, no, not at this point. They need 60 votes in the Senate to make the inheritance tax repeal permanent, and they don't have it. But they're close. But the problem is the clock is ticking. If the Congress doesn't act, the estate tax is repealed in 2010, but then it comes back in full force in 2011. And they're kind of gambling right now, because the Democrats keep saying, well, let's reform it now. Let's just raise the exemptions to $3 million tomorrow. And the all or nothing, get rid of it, repeal crowd are sort of voting against those reforms, because the reality is the Mars family and the Walton family aren't going to be helped by that, and that's the big money behind this. So they're kind of beholden to their patrons to try to get rid of the whole thing.
Mm-hmm. Chuck Collins is my guest on the Peter Werbe Show. He's a senior fellow at the United for a Fair Economy. Their website is faireconomy.org. Also, the other one, responsiblewealth.org, where you can address this estate tax. Well, you know, we only have about 3.5 minutes left, and I did want to talk about this, what's been called the bankruptcy reform bill. Now, we're talking about kind of the other end of things. On one hand, how this estate tax is going to put more money in the pockets of the already wealthy. This bankruptcy bill is going to make it more and more difficult for people to declare bankruptcy. The company said they need it because there's all this abuse of bankruptcy. How do you see it at United for a Fair Economy?
Well, we see it as a lock, stock, and barrel delivery for the credit card industry and the big finance industry. I mean, this is a squeeze, if there ever was one, on working people. Most people who declare bankruptcy do so because of health care costs, because they have had a terrible illness in their family and they've been wiped out. And we're basically saying those folks cannot declare bankruptcy and get a clean start. There's abuses of credit cards, but if the credit card industry wasn't pushing credit cards so intensely, my 9-year-old daughter gets credit card appeals. I have to send them back and saying, leave her alone.
Yeah. Well, oftentimes people look at the worst case examples, and I actually know a couple that were just profligate spenders and wound up so far over their head because they just consumed too much on their credit card, and they declared bankruptcy. And the Republicans and the credit card companies would say, see, these are the kind of people that are costing the rest of us money, and this has to be blocked.
Sure, and I think there are laws on the books now, and there are some reforms that could be made to do that, but this is about putting the credit card industry ahead of the alimony payment, taking the money out of food out of the mouths of babes. Peter, you made an interesting point about how during a time of war, we've never passed an inheritance, repealed a tax cut for the rich.
Right.
Think about both these laws in the context of a war. I went to a fundraiser recently for a friend of mine whose son is in Iraq. He's in the National Guard. And we're all raising money so we can buy him a bulletproof Kevlar vest so we can send it to him in Iraq.
Wow.
And here's the same time that we're having a bake sale to buy body armor for a young man who doesn't want to be in this war, we're also passing a bankruptcy bill that's going to make it extremely hard for his family as they struggle through the finances of losing their main income supporter. And at the same time, we're going to give Paris Hilton an unlimited inheritance. We're going to give the children of the rich, who incidentally are not on the front lines of Fallujah,
right,
an unlimited inheritance tax break. And people keep saying, well, where's the morality issue? This is a moral issue. The grotesque inequality of sacrifice that's happening under this war, no matter what you feel about the war, I think we can all agree, you don't give tax cuts to the rich when other people are putting their lives on the line.
Mm-hmm.
That is un-American.
Well, bankruptcy, the bankruptcy bill, as well as the estate tax repeal, had a lot of Democratic support. How can we, and gee, we got about 30 seconds, get these people get some spine and vote a little differently than just Republican light?
Well, it's absolutely hard. You can just see how the big financial industry, the banks and the credit card industries, really do have these guys locked down. They are such big contributors, and they really do limit the range of motion for a lot of these Democrats. As long as they have to go out and raise, $1 million a day to run for office, they're going to be having to listen to the big money interests.
So that's more tied in with like things like campaign reform. Well, Chuck Collins, thank you so much for being with us. You can go to faireconomy.org, also responsiblewealth.org, to get more information about the estate tax and the millionaires who are saying, no, don't take it away. Chuck Collins, as usual, thanks for being on the Peter Werbe Show.
Great to be with you, Peter.
Thank you for listening to Night Call on 101 WRIF. The views expressed on the program are not necessarily those of the staff, management, or ownership of WRIF Radio. Now, stay tuned for more Riff Rock on 101 WRIF Detroit.
This is WRIF.com.
If you think it's too late in life to earn the college degree you want, listen to this. Now you can go to a college designed for busy working adults. It's University of Phoenix, the nation's largest private accredited university. In most cases, you can earn a bachelor's or master's degree in just 2 to 3 years. To find out how, call 1-800-664-1391. At the University of Phoenix Detroit campus, the small classroom settings are designed for working adults with busy lives. With their efficient learning model, you'll cover more material in less time, going to convenient classes in the evening or on the weekend. At University of Phoenix, you can do this. For a complimentary brochure on degree programs in business, technology, nursing, education, and more, call University of Phoenix now, 1-800-664-1391. Programs vary by campus. Classes are forming, so call now, 1-800-664-1391. That's 1-800-664-1391.
Anglers, get ready to cast your line for a big money this year because the WRIF Fishing Championship Series is coming. The series consists of 4 tournaments this year: walleye, catfish, bass, and muskie. In each tournament, anglers compete for cash and prizes, and the team with the best average finish in the 4 tournament series will also win $1,500 cash, plus the title of 2005 WRIF Great Lakes Fishing Series Champions. After each event, competitors get to kick back and party at Big Al Sports Bar for the awards and more chances to win prizes from the Riff. The first tournament kicks off on April 23rd at the Lake Erie Metro Park for the WRIF Walleye Championship. The teams start their boats at 6:30 a.m. and will weigh their catch at 4 p.m. 2 to 3 person teams compete for thousands in cash and prizes, but one team will finish the day holding the championship trophy. To sign up or to find out about a sponsorship, call 248-591-6841 today or go to WRIF.com to get a registration form. Become the WRIF Great Lakes Fishing Series Champion. Call 248-591-6841 today.
Listening to WRIF.com.
A night of black leather, hot bands, great food, wicked bikes, and more. Plus, you can bid on a 2005 Harley-Davidson Fat Boy.
The 6th annual MDA Black and Blue Ball.
May 6th at the Ritz-Carlton in Dearborn. Call for tickets at 586-274-9000. From Ford Motor Company, Motor City Harley-Davidson, Pepsi Bottling Group, and 101 WRIF.
Detroit's Rock Station 101 WRIF and WRIF.com bring you the hottest deals in the Motor City. At WRIF.com, you are only one click away from dining at some of your favorite restaurants for only half price. Dine online and eat for less. Save a ton of money with some of Metro Detroit's best restaurants. Like Clubhouse Tavern, located in the fabulous Fisher Building, offering great food at great prices. Log on to www.wrif.com. You can purchase full-price gift certificates to area restaurants for only half price, but quantities are limited, so you better act fast. For more details, log on to WRIF.com and be sure to check out even more special offers and savings. Like Buddy's Pizza, come into any of Buddy's 9 locations today. Enjoy one of the nation's best pizza places as recognized by the Food Network. Buddy's, Detroit's number one pizza since 1946. Log on today and save at WRIF.com.
Every Tuesday, get double shots of the best riff rock.
The way you want it.
Rock. See, I told you there was a rational explanation.
2 for Tuesday on 101 WRIF.
Riff rocks.
Like what you hear on the Riff? Then why not get your Riff Rock to go? Download all your favorite Riff tunes right now with the Riff Music Store online at WRIF.com.
Riff Rock. Rocks.
The Riff rocks the road. Every week, check out WRIF.com for information on upcoming Riff events. Sponsored by Wireless Toys, announcing no more activation fees. Get reimbursed for the activation fee on any new service.